Shall we start? I take it that a copy of the agenda was circulated, but if you do not have, please do indicate by show of hands so that we can be provided with the agenda. Okay. Does look like we all have the copy of the agenda. Waiting for the honourable members that side to settle so that we can pray. Start with a prayer. Komle, just me lewena. Okay. Yeah, all right. Thanks. I will now go straight on to welcoming, onto my welcoming remarks. I'd like to welcome the honourable members of the Portfolio Committee. I see the DG is not here. Is there anyone who's been asked to act?
Chairperson, the DGs of the minister in the media conference, they were expected to have been finished now, so he should be joining us.
Okay. The DG in absentia of the department, Mr. Konde, and other officials from the department, media, members of the public, and other distinguished guests. The purpose of this meeting is mainly to get a briefing from the department on its first quarter non-financial and financial performance report for the period 2015-16 and on community education and training function shift. The committee is required to monitor quarterly financial and non-financial performance of the department as part of its oversight function and in preparation for the budget review and recommendation report, commonly known as the RRR process. Reporting on financial information is critical for determining the costs and efficiencies of programs, objectives, activities, and non-financial information is equally important for assessing progress towards predetermined service delivery on or performance targets. Now, as the committee, we are concerned with the non-achievement of targets for the first quarter of 2015-16, such that the achievement is only at 27.3%. We are seriously concerned with the continuous poor performance of Program 4, Vocational and Continuing Education and Training, as it has not achieved any of its targets in this quarter, and we urge the department to put mechanisms in place to improve the performance of this branch, which is key for the TVET and post-literacy education and training sector. The committee also noted with concern the media reports on delays in the payment of claims / salaries of community education and training educators in different provinces since the migration of the former adult education and training to the department. The committee would like to get in-depth understanding on harmonization of conditions of service of CET educators and also various interventions implemented by the department to address the challenges in the CET sector. The community education and training sector is vital to cater for needs of those who have not completed school and need a second chance. According to the latest Stats South Africa report, 3.5 million young people were not in employment, education or training. They were not in any of the three. And CET centers can offer young people and adults opportunities to be economically active. It is therefore vital for the department to prioritize the CET sector and resolve the outstanding challenges. With these few words, I would like to thank you for coming, and we are hoping that we will be able to achieve on the objective of this meeting and also have constructive engagement that will take particularly your community education, community colleges, community education colleges forward. Thank you very much. We will then move on to apologies. Are there any apologies?
Thank you, sir. We only received one apology from the minister who is attending the cabinet committee meeting today. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Admin?
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm apologizing to leave at 10 o'clock.
Okay, request to leave at 10 o'clock. I'm just checking if there's a good reason for you to leave at 10 so that you can determine whether we allow you or not. No, that's okay. That's okay. Any other apology? Okay, yes.
Chairperson, I did indicate to the DG. But is the DG accompanied by our DDG for universities? Because the minister is making an announcement of the new NSFAS chair. It's a media briefing.
Thank you very much. So these are the apologies. Yes, Professor Kozo.
Chair, once again, the minister is not here or the DG for a report of their department's performance. I would like to express my extreme concern about this. And not only that, but the minister is busy giving a statement to the media as we speak, rather than coming to this committee. So what does he think is important? The performance of his department and our oversight, or some statement to the media about a new chair of NSFAS? He could easily have given that this afternoon or yesterday.
Okay, we take note of your concern, Professor Bozoli. Honourable Member Killian.
Chairperson, I think we note what Professor Bozoli is feeling. We must just remember the minister is not a member of this committee. He should not apologize if he cannot attend. When we want to engage with the minister about particular matters, we will write to him and ask him to come for a particular session. Otherwise, we all know that he is attending a cabinet committee, as you indicated at the beginning, and I don't think we should make politics about this.
I'm just checking whether I should allow this debate to go on and on and on, eating into our time. No, but we take note of all the, you know, that have been raised. Thank you very much. Shall we then proceed with the business of the meeting? saying, okay, I'm sure those who capture the minutes with them said no. You mention, you know, register the concerns raised by Professor Bodoli. Any other matter?
Chair, the minister is not attending cabinet. He is attending a media briefing.
All right. Shall we proceed? I really don't want us to dwell on this matter forever and ever. Yes, sir.
Chairperson, I just would like to clarify. The minister is at the cabinet. Is going to be at the cabinet committee.
Mm-hmm.
The media issue was scheduled for 8:30 to complete at 9:30, and that's when the minister is going. And that's what the DG and the DDG are supporting the minister in that regard. I just wanted to clarify.
Mm-hmm.
So it was scheduled that it will be going to be at 9:30.
Okay. But let's be honest, the person who accounts to this committee is the DG. So we take note of the fact that he will be late, but in future, let's request that the committee work be prioritized. Thank you very much. So let's then move on to introductions. Are there new people who need to be introduced to this meeting? Any new person, raise your hand, please. Mr. Mbata, are you new? Okay, over to you, Mr. Mbata.
I just want to advise the secretariat that they must update the members register. The one I signed still has an old member of Ahang. We now have a new representative.
Thank you very much. I think it's important.
Thank you. It's hurting when you enter a meeting, you find somebody else's name. I'm just saying.
Okay. No, that's fine. Thank you very much. Let's be sensitive to these things. They're small, but they might, you know, be misinterpreted. Because there's now a new member. He must feel welcome and accepted. All right. Shall we then, there's no need for introductions. We will then move straight on to briefing by the Department of Higher Education and Training on its first quarter performance report of 2016. You know what happens in other committees? When the DG is not here, for instance, to account, then the meeting gets cancelled. Shall we really, as we move forward, make sure that, especially on this, the quarterly report, the DG must be here? Because it is him who's accounting. He's the accounting of nothing else. So this one he can't delegate. But because you said you'll be coming in any time, but I'm being honest, strictly speaking, other committees will then cancel the meeting because the people who are supposed to account to us are not here. And then, but then because we've got a lot of work, may I indeed beg for the members' understanding that we allow whoever is standing in for the DG to present to us in future. At least forewarned is forearmed, am I right? Yes,
Chair, I was going to suggest that because he's not far away, why don't one of the officials go out and just phone him and say the committee feels strong that he should be here. Yes.
Agreed. Okay. So what will we be doing in the meantime? We can proceed in the meantime. Okay, who is standing in the gap? Mr. Patel, so you will in the meantime. All right. Shall we then get this briefing? Mr. Patel, meanwhile, is waiting for the DG to come because we do have time constraints. All right.
Please, I must raise this, and this is not political, and I really want to disagree when the Honourable Killian raised earlier that we are raising not attendance of meetings as political. This is not political because we all care about the issues here. If the DG is prioritizing being at a press conference rather than being on time, we are all here early on time, all of us. I find that a disregard to our time. It's very disrespectful, Chairperson. And then why did the DG come to Cape Town if it is not to come and attend this meeting? And therefore, flights that is paid with taxpayers' money, I doubt he paid that out of his own pocket. And if he's there to support the minister and he's supposed to end at this time, I'm sure he can leave and say, I've got Parliament to go and attend, because that's the business that he's here to do. And therefore, I want to raise this. It's not political, Chair. Please, I detest that it's said that this is political. It's because all of us come here because we care about the issues, we care that we have a role to hold the organs of the executive to account. That's our role as members of Parliament. And therefore, we must be respected. Our time must be respected, and I don't feel our time is being respected at all.
Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity. Without having to say and amplify what Honorable Kasim has said, I sit in the Economic Development Portfolio Committee. With due respect to ANC colleagues here, the minister there, whenever when there is a departmental presentation, together with his deputy and his DG, they are always around. And I find it odd that even here, we have a DG that attends a press conference. Under normal circumstances, press conferences are earmarked for political authority. And it's even worse when the press conference is actually not so much of a departmental issue, it's an issue of a divisional agency. You see, we're not demanding respect, but we're demanding what is supposed to be apportioned by the department to us, which is appreciation of our existence. It's not something scientific. It's a normal political process that if the department wants to receive due respect to us, it must return it. And I don't think it should be viewed as being angry. It's just a cordial moment.
We accept your concern, and I'm sure the department is listening. In other committees, the problem is with members who are not attending. Here, it is the people who are supposed to account to us who are not here when we expect them to be here. Worse, this time around, we did not even receive an apology from the deputy minister, unless it's still coming. Did not come. You see, beginning not to be taken serious. What does it say? Are we too soft with you? You don't like this kind of an approach? you enjoy a hard line stance so that you can respond. But to me, really, you know, this cordial working relationship was the best. And it is being spoiled from our right. Dr. Mashaw. All right, I'll then be guided by the members.
Of what said, and we are all concerned. That's why we requested that an official should just go out and call him to come in. But in the meantime, can we allow the process to proceed while these concerns will be addressed? Thank you.
Chair, I want to raise this point. In fact, I've just pulled up a number of statements by chairpersons of other committees when the ministers or deputy ministers of those departments or those portfolios do not attend and do not show disregard, particularly when there is issues of performance within their departments. So I want to just raise this point again. This is not a political issue, because the chairpersons of those portfolio committees who have made those statements are of the same political party, of the same ministers. Therefore, they understand understand that there's a separation between the legislature and the executive arm of the state. And I want the same understanding to be made here, Chairperson. We can continue, and I see the DG has finally arrived. But I would like this committee, and particularly led by yourself, Chairperson, to draw the line and to say we would appreciate it that whenever there is a departmental report or presentation, that not only the DG as the accounting officer is present, but that the political authority as well, being the minister, any deputy minister is present as well. I don't think that's too much to ask. And if it's a problem of scheduling, then we need to get the scheduling right. If there's scheduling issues of conflicts with cabinet meetings, then we need to solve that. But we cannot go the next 3.5 to 4 years of this fifth parliament in this regard. But we do not have the political authority present when there is a departmental presentation and report, and we do not have the opportunity to be able to exercise our oversight over that political authority of the department.
Point. Well, let's welcome the DG. DG, you came at a time when we found ourselves in a crossroad, whether to proceed or not to proceed. Because there was a strong feeling that as a DG, you are actually the accounting authority. So actually, now that you are here, I think we can start. We have deadlocked. You can see the important role that you play. Okay, so in future, we will appreciate if you can prioritize the committee, especially on the quarterly reports, because it talks to performance. And also, we also took note of the fact that we received an apology from the minister, but we did not receive an apology from the deputy minister. And I think this has made us to think that we're not being taken serious. But it's fine. You hear us, you are adults, you will correct. So we'll appreciate if you can correct so that we can continue with this cordial working relationship that we have. And it has helped us to achieve a lot of work working together with you. So thank you very much.
Chairperson, thanks for giving me this platform. The DM's apologies, honestly, they had a problem with their gadgets since yesterday. So it's on its way, they are bringing it.
Sissy, that apology is not accepted. It was supposed to be here when we read apologies. On its way, after we've complained that we have not received. You see, we still feel like we're not taken serious. So shall we go back to this formal and good working relationship? I think it will take the department to greater heights. Thank you very much. Shall we then proceed with the briefing? Because, okay. Ms. Kidian?
President, I think obviously what the Honourable Casino said and also Honourable Mbata, we share the same concerns. I mean, so it is not an... When I argued on the basis of a Wednesday, which is a problem, a scheduling problem for the minister. But in principle, I think all of us support the notion that when departmental performance is under scrutiny, the political authority, either the minister or the deputy minister, should be here to hear the views of the committee, in addition to the DG. Who is the accounting officer. So in principle, we fully concur with that. The whole issue that I just wanted to raise was the fact that it is easier for those ministers who are reporting to committees on Tuesdays to also depending on their departmental responsibility. Some departments are very small administrative units, and therefore the ministers are very flexible. In other cases, there's a huge task. Now, clearly, we cannot sacrifice accountability, so we obviously want to support that. So I just want to say we don't need to argue about that point. We agree. I just wanted to put that case on the table. Thank you, Chair.
It does look like there's consensus. On the Wednesdays, where the minister from the very beginning indicated that he sees him in the cabinet meeting, but then we will appreciate where he maybe can one day excuse himself. Just come here once a quarter. I think we will appreciate it. Just once a quarter. But if it's not possible, I said where possible. If it's not possible, the minister has consistently submitted apologies for not coming to the committee. At least that, to me, that's a sign of respect for the meeting. Prof, do you really want us to continue with this debate? And what about the core business of the meeting?
Chair, I'm afraid this is the core business of the meeting. The core business of the meeting is to hold the minister to account for the department he heads, not the accounting officer. The minister, that's who accounts to us. So if the minister is not here, we are not able to tell him that we are shocked that in one area they've only met 27% of their targets and in another area none of their targets. This is appalling. And we can't tell the minister that, and he is in charge of the department, ultimately. He is responsible for the department. If he can't be here, his cabinet excuse, which he constantly trots out, does not apply to his deputy. The deputy could be here at every meeting on his behalf. And the other thing is he can occasionally apologize to the cabinet. Or we could set a meeting on another day. But really, for the minister to say, for people to say, oh, well, he's not a member of the committee, that misunderstands the constitutional role of committees entirely.
He's not a member.
It's nothing to do with being a member. It's to do with him accounting to us.
Okay.
He accounts to us, therefore he must be here. Sorry.
But please help me to, you know, be able to reach to a point where we now focus on the performance and non-performance of the department. Okay. You know what, I'm going to, I know the only hand that I recognized is Mr. Kekana's hand. The others, please, may I suppress you and then we'll go back to your proposal.
No, Chair, just in the point that has been made, is an important question. Our understanding is if the minister can't make it because of other parliamentary commitment, then the deputy will stand in for him. What aggravates it right now is that the deputy didn't come and he didn't send an apology. We're supposed to be waiting for that apology. So we've raised our concern in the strongest possible terms, and I'm sure they've heard, the department has heard, they'll convey, but for now I think we should start and proceed.
Honorable Member Kasim, do you still want to pursue? Come again? All right. Can you please remind us there's been so much that was put on the table?
Chair, my proposal was to say that whenever there is a departmental report or presentation, that the minister and the deputy minister, together with the DG, must be present. And if there's a scheduling issue, then we must be able to have our meeting on a different day. From Tuesdays until Fridays are parliamentary days, according to the program of parliament. And therefore, there's nothing that forces us to have a meeting on a particular day as a committee. And if it means that we are able to do our work better, Chairperson, which I believe it will be if the minister is present and his deputy, then we must do that. And it's not every week that the department gives a report or is easier to account. And the second thing that I want to say to support this proposal, because there's some arguments that don't make sense here, Chairperson. It's not a motivating chair.
Remember, everybody is entitled to his opinion.
No, but I have to motivate. It's part of motivating. Everyone is entitled to their opinion, but that is up to scrutiny. I can give an opinion and someone can scrutinize that. It doesn't mean that it's not up to scrutiny. But if for example, someone says that because this department is a large administrative unit, therefore we must understand, I can scrutinize that and say, well, I don't think that's...
Please
don't
scrutinize it. Just put your point on the table.
Chair, out of respect, I won't, but I really want this proposal to be taken for the benefit of us moving forward.
Okay. There's a proposal on the table, and honorable members, it's up to you now to second. Any seconder?
Okay. Mr. Suela, you look so serious on the face.
No. Chairperson, thanks. I think that the proposal of Honorable Kassim can be put on for another day and schedule a discussion around that. What we know is that as the portfolio on higher education, according to Parliament, we are supposed to meet on Wednesday. And therefore, it's not something that we can decide on that at this stage.
I agree with you that you can't change the Wednesday because it is a Parliament program. Yes. We have been programmed that way. Otherwise, we might not even find an office, a venue for our meeting. There are many, many meetings that are taking place in Parliament. All right. Yes, Honorable Pozoli.
I second Mr. Kassim's proposal. So it is now a formal proposal to the committee. But I also want to say that I know of other committees that sometimes meet three times a week in order to get through their business. We have a lot of business in this committee. We could easily meet more than once on some occasions.
Oh, no, not argument, sorry, of this debate. So shall we now proceed with the business of the meeting? Thank you very much. Is there a new proposal, Professor? So you see, it closes the proposal. So there's no new proposal. Remember, there's a proposal, if there's a second, I second it. And if there's no counter-proposal, we proceed, you see. So there was no counter-proposal to that one. Procedurally, because you did not respond. Procedurally, because he made a proposal, he seconded it, and you kept quiet. So it means that matter is closed now. Shall we then proceed with? There's no one who countered that proposal. Now embarked on a political debate. And I would like to stop it now. Shall we proceed with the business of this meeting? The business of the meeting is on our agenda, and the agenda, in terms of the agenda, we are on item number 4. What triggered this debate was the late coming of the DG and the absence of the ministry. So I think the proposal that was seconded to was that we, at least if we can ensure that the minister and the deputy minister and the DG are here on when the quarterly report is presented to the committee. That was the proposal that was put on the table. It was seconded. It was made by Honorable Member Kassim, and it was seconded by Honorable Member Pozoli. Shall we then proceed? Thank you very much. Sorry for this. But then back to square one. Are we ready now, even in terms of, I'm looking at everybody, are you okay? Ms. Killian, you must be okay. Please, let's be okay. Let's allow God to talk to us so that we focus, because actually we are deviated from the business of this meeting. Shall we then have the DG to present to us? I'm sure DG will apologize.
Thank you very much, Ted. My sincere apology in respect to coming late. It's not by design. It's such that there is a matter that had to be attended in respect to the operations of the system. And the members of the committee would really acknowledge that I don't come late to meetings. I never did that. And it's not in my practice to come late in any meeting. So my sincere apologies in respect to that. In respect to the business of the day is the presentation of the first quarter report, which I think the members have, which is covering programs of the department. In the main, program 4, program 5, in respect to our mandate, are those that are related, that is program 4, to function shift processes, where we are compelled to work with a number of provinces up to a district level and at times at college and center level in respect to the operations that we are inheriting, with a view of putting up systems that would ensure efficiency and effectiveness in the entire system. So in that respect, I will invite my colleague, Mr. Patel, to take us through on the overview as well as program two. Mr. Patel.
Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, colleague members. I just want to put a context in terms of the way the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation has put forward requirements in regards to the reporting performance information. They introduced these new guidelines and have requested all departments to prepare and submit preliminary information to the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation and National Treasury within 30 days after the end of each quarter. So that meant that by 31st of July, we had to provide preliminary information to the Department of Public Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. And then 90 days after final validated performance information is expected to be submitted both to the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation and National Treasury. So that means July, August, September, it must be validated and sealed and closed. So they brought in the process of preliminary and final, just in the way in which we work in terms of our finances, where we have estimates and then we have final outcomes. And the reason that they've introduced this is to remove any uncertainty and doubts around different versions of reports, so that we report on this date but we say no, A, B and C has subsequently been achieved. So in terms of public record, both what has been submitted to them as well as what we submit to the portfolio committee at that point in time should speak to each other. And we can, as a sideline or byline, indicate what is the progress in terms of those that were not achieved, etc. But it's not part of the formal record in terms of the submission. So I think I wanted to put that context really in place. For 2015-16, we had a total of 43 key deliverable targets and identified 31 expected outcomes. For this quarter under review, with information as at 31st July, for the quarter ending 30th June, there were 10 delivery targets to report on. So the preliminary information as at the 31st of July shows that 3 of the targets were achieved and 7 were not achieved. And as the program managers go into each one of this, they will clarify. Basically, it's 2 programs in terms of the non-achieved, and that is Program 4 and Program 5. So the further details will be provided by the program managers. So let me move then into Program 2, and then I'll hand over to the other program managers. On slide number 6, we had Program 2 had a total of 4 key deliverable targets. There were no specific targets for quarter ending 30th June. However, a number of activities were undertaken towards achievement of the targets that are due for other quarters, for subsequent quarters. Chairperson, if I could now hand over to DDG Corporate Services for Program 1.
Thank you, Mr.
administration. So we'll just go back one slide to slide 5.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning to the honorable members. Program 1 has a total of 6 key delivery targets for the 2015-16 financial year. And for the quarter ending in June 2015, we're expected to produce an approved ICT procurement plan, and that target has been achieved. There's been no deviation. Let me also say that in respect to the following quarters, there is work in progress, and we'll report on that when the time comes. Thank you.
Chairperson, the university branch.
Thank you. For the university branch, we had program 3 had a total of 7 key delivery targets, and we also identified 17 expected system outcomes in the annual performance plan for the education subsystem. Before the quarter ending the 30th of June, we had one specific delivery target, and that was to produce an evaluation report on the HAIDS program, the Higher Education AIDS program, for the 2014-15 financial year, and this was achieved and approved by the DG before the end of that quarter. So as we go forward, significant work has been done in terms of other targets that will be coming up in the next 3 quarters. Thank you.
Chairperson, Program 4, research.
Chairperson and honorable members, for the 2015-16 financial year, Program 4 has a total of 8 key delivery targets and 10 expected system outcomes in the ATP for the research branch. For the quarter ending 30 June 2015, program had 4 targets, and at the time of reporting, none of those had been achieved. System performance in respect of the identified expected outcome will be reported during quarter 4. The following slide details in respect of preliminary performance information in terms of the 4 targets. As an overview of the following 2 slides, I understand that we are basically trying to establish systems or trying to establish policies in order to manage effectively the functions that we have inherited. With regard to establishing good practice governance standards, we targeted developing a suite of policies which are going to set up good financial management and governance standards in colleges. And at the time of reporting, this target had not been achieved, but with 3 of these targets, we already had drafts which were yet to be approved. Now, the second target which we put in place, the area of adult education, which we have renamed community education and training, had completely no staffing norms, and each province did its own thing. And now it is requisite for the department to be able to develop staffing norms so that systematically the system is staffed on the basis, on a common basis. This target, given the fact that we discovered that there is a lot of baseline data which we require, and this is a target which we have reason to believe that we still have to go and do a lot of research, have a funding framework so that we are able to determine what would be the implications of the funding norms to the compensation of employees, to the operational budget of each center, and therefore we must determine also the unit cost. And this is the policy also which will require that at the point when we finalize it, and then the minister has to approve so that it serves as a basis for us to engage with units. And I think we might, target with which we set at the end of the 2014-15 financial year, the grant, the conditional grant ceased to exist. We were monitoring the system on the basis of the conditional grant framework. Now, then it is requisite that we had to develop a new monitoring evaluation model which will take into account how the system performs in relation to subsidies and transfers, as well as other performance targets. And this framework has, the draft thereof has been completed, is just subject to approval. It is going through the process of approval. Now, this quarter, during the quarter under review, you will recall that in our presentation initially we said there is going to be merit in us emphasizing the issue of improving throughput and quality and academic success among the students. And therefore, there are two related plans that we had to develop. One during the quarter under review was the Student Support Service annual performance plan. And the other one during the second quarter into which we are going is the Teaching and Learning Annual Plan. The Student Support Services annual plan has already been developed and approved, but it was after the time of reporting. Thank you very much, Chair.
Yeah, if I may just elaborate on this. I think it's important to note, especially by the members of the Portfolio Committee, that in respect to adult education and training, the work that was done by the AG made a recommendation to the department that it's the function that we should not take as a department because of its disclaimer nature. We should leave it to the provinces to undertake that exercise. But our argument was that if we leave it in that state of affairs, the risk is that nobody will ever attend to it. We rather take it over and we work from scratch to build the system. That's what we're doing. It's a conscious decision because we think it's in the best interest of the system. Now, you would then find that in both adult education and training, as well as TVET colleges, some of the challenges that we are discovering as we are working is that there is absence of baseline information in place, nothing. Now, having assumed that there are systems in place, baseline information is available, but only to discover that when you're working on that there is nothing in place in actual fact. The absence of just basic policies and systems, that's another area. Now, in respect to adult education and training, unavailability of data of any sort, we're doing everything just from scratch and putting systems in place in respect to that. And in respect to TVET colleges, unreliability of data. Because today it gives you this, the following day it has changed. So you can't work on it at all. Now you have to redo everything. So there are those challenges that are out there that we have to deal with. But it's an area that we had to go to it quite consciously. And the targets that we have identified are areas that we think are important in terms of putting just basic minimum operational standards in place so that we could be able to work from there to improve the efficiencies in the system. So that is the kind of challenges that are confronting us. We are not putting up any excuse But that is the reality of the situation, and there is empirical evidence in respect to that, especially in the work that the AG has actually undertaken. And we're working together in cleaning up the system and the processes. So at this stage, I would invite Program 5, which is Dean Grant, to take us through.
Thanks very much, DG. Thanks very much, Chairperson and honorable members of the committee. For the quota that is under review, Program 5, we plan to deliver 5 targets, of which one was achieved. And I can also mention that subsequently 2 others have been achieved. If you look to the first one, a CETA monitoring report on skills development produced and approved. That one was not achieved, but then subsequently it has been achieved. The second one, average lead time from trade test application received until trade test conducted. We targeted, therefore, the quota 100 days. What we have achieved there is 170, meaning we, therefore, we did not achieve that target. The reason being that we lost key officials within artisan development within the area of 6 months. But then, of course, we are now in the process of advertising this weekend about 7 chief artisans. And also we are going to be filling a chief director as well as 3 director posts. The next one, new artisan learners registered nationally per annum. The quota target was 5,000. At the time of the report, it was 4,102. But then I can also report now that that target has since been achieved, because when we reported, that was only for the period of 2 months, not 3 months. Another one, new artisans qualified per annum. The quota target there was 3,000. What we have achieved at the time was 1.573. But then I can say with the full report we have received now, we have managed to make 2,458, meaning which therefore were less by 452. But then, of course, reasons are the reasons that I've just mentioned with regard to losing some key officials, especially chief artisans and directors in that area, of which this weekend we're advertising some of these areas. The last one is dealing with the National Artisan Learners Pass Trade Test Rate. There we are focusing at Indela because we do have systems at Indela whereupon we can measure that. So our quarterly target was 50%. What we have achieved there is 58% pass rate. So it means, therefore, that we have achieved by plus 16% that particular target. Thanks very much, Chairperson and the DG.
Thank you, Chairperson, honorable members. The next 3 slides just give some explanatory notes on the financial position as at the end of June. And then slide 19 and slide 20, you will see there are tables where this information comes from. Now, first of all, if you look at the overall spending rate of the department at the end of the first quarter, it is 39.4%. And that includes the direct charges, the funds transferred to the CETAS, as well as the NSF from the skills levy. If we exclude the direct charges, the department spending is at 45.2%. Now, obviously that sounds very high, but one must take into account that we do uneven transfers, which is the majority of our funding under Program 3 and Program 4. Specifically for the universities and TVET colleges. In the case of universities, we do not pay subsidies during January, February and March. They receive all those subsidies during the month of April, and then in May we again pay April and May, etc., etc. So with the result that the percentage spending looks very uneven, but it's mainly as a result of those transfers. On the fourth bullet, we then can see that the normal operational activities and if we include compensation of employees for the department, was at 20.2%. Now that gives a more relevant percentage in terms of the normal operations. If you look at compensation of employees specifically, because that's one of our key risks at the moment, the percentage was 20.6%. It is slightly lower than normal, but I think if you look at the next slide, we just want to explain that. In terms of personnel remuneration, now just to flag that compensation consists of normal personnel remuneration, but then also the claims paid for examiners and moderators. So if you look at our normal personnel remuneration, the percentage was 19.9%, which is the key reason why the average is only 20%, because what we had there is during the transfer of the TVET and CET functions to the department, in the case of the Eastern Cape, those transfers through the system only took place during June. So the records as at the end of June is then without all the expenditure for the Eastern Cape province, which is a number of thousands that we are talking about, and that expenditure will only kick in during the end of July it started, and some will come in August. So we trust that at the next quarter we will have a more accurate percentage spending in terms of personnel expenditure. In terms of examiners and moderators, very bright red light of 84.3% by the end of June. It is a high risk, and it will still be influenced by examinations later in the year. The increased enrollments in TVET colleges will also have an impact on the spending of examiners and moderators. The department is looking at that, and a meeting will be scheduled with the Director General, the branch, and the examinations unit to see how this matter can be managed in future. If you look at the next slide, in summary, the transfer payments and subsidies were processed as planned. Everything is on schedule. We still monitor our expenditure very closely, especially with the unknown circumstances of the TVET function shift, as well as for adult education and training. And as I indicated, some of those are still late in the system, so it's very difficult to have an accurate picture of what the actual results of the department will be. Cost-saving measures that were implemented during 2014-15 are still in place, and we adhere to that very strictly. If you look at the various programs, just to flag that there are two programs that currently overspend in terms of the information provided, especially on slide 19, where the information per program is reflected. Now, those are programs 2 and 5. Just to explain the reason for that is, as we received the personnel from the TVET functions and the adult education and training functions from some of the provinces, there were problems with the link codes on PERSOL. So those transfers takes place electronically from the provinces to national, and it feeds into our PERSOL system. And during that transfer process, some of the link codes were wrong, in fact. And what happened there was that those expenditure based on the codes that were used in the provinces were then wrongly directed to programs 2 and 5 and not to program 4, where the actual expenditure and the budget is. So in that regard, we are busy. We have total exceptions of close to 17,000 on the system, which we are in the process of correcting. Those must be done by hand, unfortunately. So it is taking quite some time. And until all those have been corrected, we will still see that Program 2 and 5 will reflect over expenditure and Program 4 substantial under expenditure. But at the end of the day, all the spending has been correctly recorded, it's just to link it to the correct program. So, Chair, slide 19 and slide 20 just give the information per program as well as per economic classification, and I think I've explained everything on those two slides. Thank you very much.
Maybe, Chair, I think there are three crucial things. In this area of finances, our hands are really tied, you know, as a department, because there hasn't been additional funding from the National Treasury for the past 4 years. And instead, the budget allocation to the department was adjusted down for operation. It's a matter which is constraining ourselves quite a lot in doing the work that we're supposed to be doing. We work now on the basis of reprioritization in order to get things done, even in instances where there are compelling genuine reasons for funding. So it's an area which is really a problem for us. Of course, we understand the challenges, you know, of the country quite broadly. But when it comes to this area, I think it's constraining us a lot as a Department of Higher Education and Training, looking at the nature of our mandate and the expectations there, expectations of which, by and large, are quite genuine in respect to the role that we should be playing as a department. And if there is anything that the portfolio committee should really play its part on, amongst others, is this area. I know we have to do a lot with nothing in many instances. Thank you, sir.
Well, honourable members, you have been listening to a briefing by the Department of Higher Education and Training on their first quarter performance report. I will now allow members to reflect on the presentation and engage in a discussion on the same presentation. Honourable Member Kozoli, Honourable Member Suela, Honourable Member Killian, Honourable Member Kasim, Honourable Member Mbata, and Honourable Member Mkuta. In that order.
Thank you, Chair. The question of unfunded mandates is something that we have raised before in this committee, which is that basically the Department has been expected to do huge amounts of additional things, such as running TVETs, adult education, community colleges, etc., which it wasn't doing before, without the requisite funding. and I would like to ask that the committee expresses its extreme concern about the unfunded mandate which the department has been given, because you can't say to a department, you must do the following, and then not give them the money to do it. And we are now finding the crunch is coming. We've only just transferred all of these things properly, and we're already finding that we're running out of the requisite funds, as we predicted. That's my first point. So I would like the committee, if possible, to make some sort of statement or stand on that question. The second question is the one of the transfer. Now, I did object to the fact that the department was going ahead willy-nilly with transferring the TVETs on the 1st of April, that wonderfully auspicious date. And the minister replied to my concerns, saying that really the ball was rolling and it was very difficult to stop, and he would stick to the 1st of April. However, I do think we deserve a comprehensive report now, again, on the function shift. Because what we're getting today is clearly, because a quarterly report goes through different divisions,
What we're getting today is a fragmented report on the function shift, and in each part it's touched on, there are concerns, financial and organizational and in terms of knowledge available, etc. So like we had function shift reports previously while it was being planned, I would say it would be useful for the committee to hear a comprehensive function shift report now that it's August. This has been going on for a while in each division, TVET, community colleges, and adult education, so that we can begin to get a comprehensive picture, not only of the lack of funding, but of what else is missing in each of these areas, and maybe make a contribution towards how one can improve the situation. But it is of considerable concern that all of these very important areas in education are being handled by a department which is clearly underfunded. Thank you.
Thank you for your questions and the point that you have made, Honorable Member Kozoli. And the next one is Honorable Member Suela.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. Let me welcome the presentation. I just want to address myself to the district branch, which obviously did not achieve, you know, all its targets. Of course, there are reasons that are advanced, and part of the reasons are that there is lack of baseline information. Now, what I would like to know is what will happen to these targets? Are you going to revise them? Are you going to revise the targets? That's what I would want to know. Or will you continue to work towards achieving them in the financial year? If that is so, when do you think will you achieve these targets? Now, for program one, yes, of course, the only target that was set was achieved, but then I would like to know what will be the role of the State Information Technology Agency in the plan. Chair, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member Suela, for your question. The next one is Honorable Member Killian.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think if we look at the report before us, then obviously we are all concerned about the fact that altogether for the year ahead we have 43 targets. Only 10 of those were due at the end of quarter one, and of that, for very good reasons. That was presented here, the targets were not achieved. Now, clearly we are concerned about the knock-on effect of that. Honorable Suweda has requested information whether some of the targets will be adjusted, etc., but also there were reports that some of the targets were achieved but after the deadline date. So clearly that was work in progress. I am, however, concerned about Program 4 in particular, and then Program 5. Now, we're going to have a report a little later on the migration of adult education centers. But I support Professor Bazzoli's request for just an update on the college sector. I do fear that if we look at the situation, it appears that if you look at the fact that the staffing norms and standards are not in place, etc., what of those elements may have a budgetary implication? So, whereas it appears that in the finance department that you're looking very clearly about the impact, actually, if I'm maybe wrong, but it appears to me that we don't quite know what to expect, because adult educators are coming onto the payroll. We didn't get from National Treasury what we needed. The college implications of that and the structure and the norms and all of that. Now, what if I think about what has happened with the migration reports that we've had before and the lack of cooperation from provinces, I fear we will have very serious problems to try and align all of that in remuneration packages, in a structure in the department. How do you revert back to try and level out salary packages? You know, so is there any indication from the department how they will try to phase that process in? Because it's all good and well, and I think it was a question is, if you're driving, a bike and you're going down a slide, you just have to keep on top of it and just go ahead and see if you can stay on top. And I get the feeling that that was more or less what the department's approach to this migration and function shift was. But ultimately, it's going to catch up. And I think that was also the fear that was expressed by some of the other members. How do you manage that? I see the high risk and the problem was identified on page 17, or on slide 17. But it appears to me that the real impact of all of this is still very clearly not known. How do you intend to do that? I hear what the DG has said. I think that the portfolio committee will have to play a very significant role here to try and request from Treasury, because the expectations are out there. We have to change the system around. How do you do that without funds? You cannot manage this system without additional funding. And I just fear that the fact that we didn't have the cooperation and all of that is now coming down, I think we're going to still face very tough times ahead. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member Killian, for your questions. I will now move over to Honourable Member Kasim.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I've mostly been covered. I just want to go back to the function shift of the TVET colleges and not to repeat the questions that have been asked, and of course supporting the proposals that have been made for a full presentation and report on the manner in which the function shift has taken place and is taking place. My question to the department is, does it have the capacity currently to deal with these TVET colleges? And I prefer that question, Chairperson, having visited many of these TVET colleges myself to perform oversight. A lot of these, the college management there didn't seem to understand how to deal with many, many things. They didn't seem capacitated on how to deal with specific challenges that are facing them as a college that now falls under the department, and they didn't feel as if they had the support from anyone. So if they, for example, ask for help, they were not getting any responses. Major issues that are affecting them and their students, legal battles that they are facing, Chairperson, are examples of this. So my question is, exactly what's the capacity picture looking like from the department in managing all 50 of these TVET colleges that are spread across the country, and there's more TVET colleges that are supposed to be coming online as well going forward? How is that going to be dealt with? What's the department's plans in order to fix the manner in which the structures of these colleges are being run? Because as was noted, there's a lack of baseline information, there's unreliability of information, and clearly the systems, there's an inconsistent systems at these colleges. One does not operate very, very differently from another. They don't have clear policies. We're not sure, I'm not sure if the department is sure whether those policies are in line with the acts etc., is the proper compliance. And what I've picked up, Chair, is that there's a lot of problems that have been inherited because the provincial education departments, knowing that these are going to be migrated, just didn't care for the last, I don't know how, what period of time, on fixing issues or problems or investing anything, because they knew that this is now going to be migrated over to the department. And therefore, are there any unforeseen or were there any unforeseen these type of issues that's been inherited that's now been picked up by the department that now affects the type of targeting that the department had to set? Because remember, these targets were set beforehand. Many of the targets weren't met. But does it affect the planning? Does it affect the way that the department approaches these colleges, etc.? Chairperson, my second question is with regards to Program 5, particularly within the artisan development. We keep hearing, I know particularly from the Deputy Minister who's not here, that in the decade of the artisans, and I'm sure if that's true, these are the most important targets. How many artisans are qualifying? If we set a target of 3,000, and which I actually mentioned initially when we were reviewing the performance plans, etc., that is a very modest target. But we should be targeting higher than that if, you know, the political statements that have been made on the issue are meant to be believed by the public. But we're not meeting those targets. So even those targets aren't being met, and therefore, young people that have this expectation that government is prioritizing skills development and artisan training, and they have been failed in this regard, what is the plan from the department? Because now the CTAs that you are dealing with as well, I'm not sure the effect of, you know, their performance. I know that there are CTAs that were, for example, funding training in previous years that have decreased that funding. I'm not sure what the monitoring of that that's taking place. But exactly what can the department then do about those kinds of things? Thank you, Chair.
All right. Thank you for the questions that you raised, Honourable Member Christine. The next one will be Honourable Member Mbata.
Thank you very much, Chair. My first query will relate to Program 2. I note that there were no specific achievables. However, it is important that maybe you share with us, based on the experiences stipulated on slide 8, which relates to harmonization and labor relations issues. I mean, at the strategic level, how have you been able to maneuver your way out? Noting very well that if you look at the teasers and the manner in which they were fragmented and ran across the provinces, they were ran more in a federal manner. Every province did its own and tried its own. Some were very specific, some had a journey, some were very destructive and almost to no journey at all. And one of the biggest problems you are going to have is harmonization issues. You have a country with a very strong unionized community of workers, and those issues will keep visiting you. So I want to know at a strategic level, what is it that you have been doing in that area? I could see here you had some things happening in Northwest Limpopo and so on. And then Program 3, one of the biggest nightmares of the higher education is its journey to unify the system with the inclusion of TVET. And in the next, I would say, two financial years, you will have TVET presenting the largest numbers of higher education. And be that as it may, you will also have what you will call the large numbers of your TVET students staying out of the formal accommodation, what I would call environment. What are the plans to extend your EA to the TVET colleges to both understand the dilemma, the fact that the large numbers will be outside the system in terms of accommodation, and the greater numbers will obviously have to be attended still, and that you always have the small pool that is accommodated. So the lifestyle, behavioral environment will completely be very dynamic. So you can't actually do what you did with universities and assume the same expectations. So you need a much more analyzed way in which how you will deliver this into your TVET colleges. My advice to you will be new relationships, in particular with your provincial health, to make sure that in the foreseeable future there are what I would call primary health facilities built next to TVET colleges, and that in the foreseeable future also you do value add to the TVET colleges by offering like-minded skills to go back to the community. Skills such as, for instance, what do you call this? Community health. But there is programs on community health workers, things like that. Because for me, it is when your system speaks directly to your community that your system will tend to be economical. Because then you don't invest alone. You invest collaboratively with other players. So I would like to know if there is a possibility of things like that. We do not have to have a situation here one day where you tell us that there is an over-explosion of HIV/AIDS in TVET colleges through one of your own investigations. You should be able to plan within the system and with other players to contain and advance what I would call service and resourcing of the sector. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Honorable Member Mbata. May I request members that as they intervene, if they can be short and to the point, so we can have more time for responses. The next one now is Honorable Member Mkunu, who will be followed by Honorable Member Ketana, and then we hand over to the department to respond.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. May I thank the presentation from the department, and also say that I think all of us, insufficient funding for higher education is a concern. My question to Program 1, in the third and fourth quarter report, there was something on the interview for DDG skills, which was going to be conducted in July. I would like to know whether the process was undertaken, and if so, when will the appointed candidate commence with work? On university education, I would like to know how effective is the higher education aids program, the one that you got, that you were targeting, since its implementation. Is there an improvement in both student and staff lifestyle, or a decrease in new infections, just to get an idea of the impact of this program? Lastly, I would like to say that the performance of VSET and skills development is concerning, really, in all the quarters. When you're doing quarterly reports, it will be your VSET and skills development which will be having this. I don't want to use bad, poor, all those funny names, but they don't have a pleasing report in terms of performance. Maybe the department, maybe DG, you need to maybe focus more on these two so that we can see maybe an improvement, even in terms of the achievement of targets that they have set for themselves. The department did not meet the targets in 2014-15, third and fourth quarter on the number of artisans as displayed in the report, number of new artisans candidates registered nationally, and reasons advanced from deviation for deviation was that not all sitters have submitted the required data. I would like to know what was the department's response for sitters and indlela for non-compliance in submitting the required information. And I would also like to plead with the department maybe to send us these sitters, names of these sitters that did not comply, as we know that most of the sitters, their performance is not good. And now to find again when they are required to send information that will assist us in ensuring to see how they are performing, it is of great concern. Maybe it will be good so that we know when this new sitter landscape is, you know, being developed, we know whether this one will assist or we need completely new, we just do away with it because they are not compliant. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Member Mkunu, for the questions that you've raised. Honorable Member Kitana.
Thanks, Chair. On Program 1, where we dealing with IT, I'm just trying to understand how you work. With the shortages of certificates, did you have a hand in it? In other words, as people are in charge of IT in the department, even if you get other people to beat you up, consultants, for example, in the production of Maulusi's certificates for students, don't you, as your area of specialization, advise? In other words, can you hold you responsible for shortages of certificates and how far you're doing these days? I mean, it surprises that you've reached your target, but that thing overshadows whatever target you're talking about, because those certificates, wherever we went in our oversight, colleges were complaining about them. I just want to hear the what's your involvement in it. Number two, again on the TVET, remember when we were talking to you, the concern is that we're having such high hopes that South Africa will produce students that have skills that can create jobs and combat poverty. And now if we hear targets are not achieved, to us what comes to mind is the issue of, oh, how poor are we going to be now? And this is a vicious cycle, because if the economy don't grow, the money that we need to spend more on education can't be there. If the economy shrinks, treasury has told us, don't ask for money that is not there. So at least let's show some competence. With little that we have, let's achieve. Let's show that we are efficient, and I'm sure that will have a spillover on our economy. So this thing of artisans, can you just take us again through? I don't understand when there's a preliminary report for 2 months, and we are told this is a quarterly report, that subsequent things have been achieved, but 2 months they haven't been. Are you not reporting on 3 months quarter report? So that there's no confusion, because this preliminary and quarterly report, I don't know which is which now. But the point is, for TVET, exactly how are we going to improve the situation there? Because that's a big, big, big concern. We really must create jobs. we really must create, use education to combat poverty. And the way we are doing and the way we're taking things easy, that is worrying. I can tell you it's going to be tough from now on from us portfolio committee. Because whether we like it or not, this is the only hope for South Africa to deal with these problems of poverty.
Thank you, Honorable Member Kitana. I will now hand over to the DG to respond to all the issues raised.
No, thank you very much. Just a brief check. I think that the idea of a comprehensive report on the function shift is quite important. I think that's what we should be working on in the department, and we're going to submit that report, which is explaining everything in that regard. Now, the question of whether the department has capacity or not, our response to this question is that for the system to function quite efficiently and effectively, in the first instance, there must be structures that are prescribed at college level as well as at a departmental level. One of the gaps that we identified in the TVET college space, it was the question of governance. And we worked through quite systemically, and to date, all colleges do have councils in place who have been trained, given documentation, legislation, manual, explained what the roles and responsibilities do they have. Now, what we are doing now is to oversee the exercise of that responsibility by government structure, and where we pick up that there is some interference with operational issues, we attend to those issues with a view of addressing them. The second thing is that there must be basic or minimum policies, standard policies that are in place. We have identified that factor. We are working with SAICA HR generalists as well as the capacity that we have in the department to develop all these policies. And to date, we have developed around 41 policies, and we are finalizing them for implementation across the college sector, because that has been a huge gap. Now, the other area that we have identified, we hinted, I think sometime last year in respect to this, is in respect to internal control in the TVET college. We did work with SAICA CFOs as well as AG in identifying what is the nature and the extent of the absence of just basic internal controls in that area. And we then developed, as a department, having that information, a comprehensive schedule with an annexure, which is identifying as to what are the internal controls in respect to governance. For instance, lack of audit committee. So those basic things. Then we list all of them, and then we prescribe as to what then are the minimum actions to be put in place by the council. You go to HR issues. What are the gaps? We list all of them. What are the minimum controls and actions that must be in place? You go to the supply chain management, asset register, because other colleges don't even know their properties. They are just lying all over the place. So this is the systemic work that we are actually doing in ensuring that we are rectifying the situation. In respect to some of the areas that Honorable Member Kassim is talking about, the majority of problems
in the colleges is a backlog in relation to disciplinary cases. We are attending to those, we are cleaning them up, and we have progressed quite very well in respect to that cleanup and ensuring that operations and the system are in place and correct processes and procedures are undertaken at a college level. Because some of the things, they just require systems, processes, procedures, as well as the requisite policies that should be in place for any entity or college to be able to operate. Yeah, just lastly from my side, I'll give my colleagues. We have been rolling out a program on HIV matters at university level, the paid higher education, which we budgeted for. But one of the limitations of that is that it was not available for TVET colleges. Now we are rolling it out to TVET colleges as well to address that issue. Our motto is that we must not train for the grade. So that intervention is actually looking at ensuring that our youth is given support and is assisted to overcome the HIV-related challenges in the system. I would ask my colleagues to come in respect to some of the pertinent questions that the honorable members have raised. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and members for those questions. On the issue of targets being revised, in terms of the guidelines from departments of planning, monitoring, and evaluation, one of the issues is what they call, like the way that we have in budgets, adjustment estimates, that we could adjust the particular targets. But there's a process in which we must undergo the particular issue of motivation, the concurrence of the minister, providing reasons as to why those targets will not be achieved so that we can bring it to alignment. Because if you remember, this APP was approved in November and it went through the whole particular process. In regards to the knock-on effect, such as norms and standards to be implemented, yes, we did identify this as a massive risk. One of the reasons for the movement of FET colleges that were called FET colleges to higher education was the unevenness in which these colleges were being managed. The issue is more critical, not so critical in TVET colleges, because basically the norms and standards have been kept up to date. The issue is in the community education and training colleges, and when we provide the second report, I'll go into particularly more detail around it. In terms of the Labor Relations Act and the Community Education and Training Act, if you remember that when you change from an old employer to a new employer, you come in with exactly the same conditions of service. However, we know that in one employer, over some time, people would want to have equalization of conditions of service. And that is an issue related to two things. Firstly, we must be able to get funds, mandates for funds, and we will have to manage that over time. And all organizations undergo that particular process. In other words, you can be a loser, but you can't suddenly be able to gain. So yes, Member Killian, the issue of norms and standards have to be implemented, but depending on how. So we can develop norms and standards, but we can't go out and say, Minister, approve this, because we will have to go through the mandating committee of cabinet, we will have to get that particular funds, and the biggest issue. bargaining is a collective bargaining, and we know that it's, so that's why part of these targets in reset, the framing of the target was would be approved and developed after consultation, and the issue is part of our adjustment will have to be is we cannot predict. If we could predict that we will shotgun something, then we could say we will have it at a date. But if there is public views and stakeholder views that go counter, it will have to take us time to be able to look at other alternatives. And that sort of covers somehow some of the issues that Member Kassim raised, but colleagues will add. In regards to the whether there were unforeseen issues, I doubt it, because in the plan, in terms of the functions of that, I was am responsible in particular the managers. All these risks were identified quite early. Member Mbata, the issue of the issue of harmonization of labor relations is related to my previous response. It's a cost factor. In terms of Section 197 of the LRA, is you come with your same terms and conditions that you were with an old employer, not that favorable. But it happens that the unevenness and sometimes bordering on illegality of the way that the provinces have got away with murder, and it's across the board, including the Western Cape, Eastern Cape, KwaZulu-Natal, and I'll come to my, in terms of my report, fronting of legislation. But the issue there is that, again, we know that we will have to keep people down, tempers down, etc. It's a challenge we have to take on as a responsible employer. We can go and equalize all conditions of service and at peace, but the issue is where do we get the money from, and we are accountable for those particular issues. But our aim is to ensure that we bring in and change it, and that's why, as the DG indicated, we really want to take on the struggle that we have with in regards to National Treasury about not allowing us to reprioritize. A 1% cut on recent budget can do so much, and I'm talking of shift, so much that we can start improving. Rather than saying, no, don't cut the money going to them, but allow them to particularly mismanage it, etc. There was, and then, yes, Member Kikana, yes, I mean, I think the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation is trying to get our reporting systems in alignment, and that's what's causing some of the issue. Now, if I give you the example of the VSET targets. Now, visit targets are targets that we have to get in terms of right from the ground, in terms of institutions. How many registration forms were completed, get those registration forms, etc. So, what we could have reported to make it easier was to say that the data is still being collected and do not make a judgment on achievement or not. In other words, don't make a judgment. The information that we had when we did this preliminary report was 2 months of information, January and February, because that information came in, was processed, validated. The information that we did not have, remembering that this report to the portfolio committee and to DPME was completed not this week, but by the end of July. So, Member Kikana, the issue is that the information on March, right, was not there when the date the report was completed. And therefore, we've got the information now, and in our final Vala was giving us just a pre-warning, because he had the information on hand, which became available to him yesterday. So that's why I think we've got to keep the record like that. So, yes, I think that's Chairperson, the other strategies there. Dr. Marshall?
DJ, the only question that I would like to address myself is the comment by Honorable Kassim, which was referring to the inability of the department to respond to requests for support by college principals. In actual fact, we have gone all out to support college principals who ask for assistance from us. However, we also have to be mindful that when we take the authority of the principal to manage the institution, we will not be able to manage all the children. And therefore, our approach is to build the capacity of the principal to manage the institution, because if you manage it on his behalf, you are eroding the system's confidence, the college's confidence on the principal to manage. And also, these instances are very sporadic in nature. Most of our college principals have got grips in what is happening in their institutions, but we are aware that there are a few principals who need to be handheld. However, we say we strengthen the principal and ensure that the governance and the management of the college work together to provide leadership in the institution, instead of, in other words, we cannot make the intervention a norm. It should at least be an exception, because if you make it a norm, then nobody is going to believe that the council is able to govern, and nobody is going to believe that the institute, the principal, is able to manage. And that is basically our approach. In many instances where we have had to intervene, we have put the governance structures of the, and management structures of the college to the forefront and have provided support.
In short, honorable members, we support, we capacitate college management. We don't babysit it.
Thanks very much, Chairperson and honorable members. I must say, in fact, that we have met all the targets for the year ended 31st March 2015, including artisans. We targeted for 27,000, we have achieved 28,000, we are over by 1.3. Those found competent, we targeted 18,000, we achieved 14,000. We have overachieved by 1,389. But then, Chairperson, in the area I want also to raise is the fact that currently we are procuring goods for what we refer to as a gap closure for artisan recognition prior learning. We are targeting areas such as a boilermaker, a welding electrician. The challenge that we do have at Indlela is that we are meeting for the first time these persons who are coming to apply for trade testing. You do not have a background of them. So you put through trade testing and you come up with a lot of them who require some gap closure. So that is why, therefore, we are transforming some of the workshops at Indlela to move further than just trade testing someone and then just say bye, and then you can go home. So our approach is bit developmental in that area. I must also mention, Chairperson, that we are having what we call it an artisan recognition of prior learning policy, and that is going to be for public comment. And currently, we are also piloting more than 200 artisan aids in this area. And I can report that 59 of them are already recommended for trade testing. You know, we do have a lot of these artisan aids out there. So it's an area that we are paying a particular attention into. And also, on the 11th August, we are going to be publishing for public comments a trade test pass rate and quality improvement strategy. So we will require everyone to make also some comments around those areas. DTG Patel has mentioned, because we're dealing at some point with what I refer to as supervening impossibility of performance factors. In this area that we have referred to, that were people who left the system in the artisan development area. Normally, when someone leaves, you take time to close that gap. And then we have an arrangement with the DDG Corporate Services that we must fast track, especially in filling these areas of chief artisans, and we're advertising in this weekend. And lastly, this area about the deadlines within the department is that we must report on the 7th of a month post-quarter. By that time, sitters are not ready for information. We get that information on the 15th post-quarter. So meaning, therefore, we are behind by some few days with regard to the departmental reporting. So that is why there is always this lacuna, of which we really hope that going forward we'll be able to address it. Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you, DG. Chairperson, there are two questions that I will respond to. The first one is on the role of SETA in the procurement of IT services. In terms of the SETA Act, the department cannot go on its own and procure for IT services. So SETA does the procurement, and then the DG approves the appointment of the company. The second one is on the report that we gave last time about the appointment of DDG for skills development. Yes, indeed, the process has gone. The recommendation was made. It's pending the approval of the cabinet. Thank you very much.
Thank you, DG. Honorable Kagala did ask the issue of certification. It's not in branch administration, because it's been escalated. The DG has taken personal responsibility for that with the CEO of SETA, and I think the committee is aware that they will be coming back to report in regards to that. I just wanted to follow up. I just wanted to follow up on the issue that Honorable Ketum made. You see, Honorable Ketum, the workload of principals and their roles and responsibilities never changed since the establishment of the FIT committee. In fact, with the function shift, 80 to 90% of their problems have disappeared in regards to managing HR. Sorry, Ketum, you. In terms of managing HR. And I think there needs to be a question. We have legal limitations of how much, how we may wish to intervene. We may wish to change, but we must note that the legislature has given TVET councils, community education and training councils, and universities the same powers and roles. So if we say there is anything that we must intervene in terms of an operational matter, there's been just a judgment now where the DG, in terms of a PFMA, has requested an investigation into serious fraud issues. The High Court threw it out and said that the DG doesn't have that authority because there is a council there, and it's for the council to deal with it. And if the council is unable to deal with it, then it's the minister that must deal with the council. So that is the way the system is. So the issue is, do we move towards managing them as schools, etc.? But that's why we need more power to be able to use the monitoring mechanism that the legislation allows us, so that we will be able to. So I just wanted to clarify that from my role in terms of the legal and legislative process.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. I'm going to just focus on the issue of the HAZE program. Just to indicate that the work that is being done by HAZE does appear to be quite good and very successful.
What has happened in the last couple of years is we've extended it now to all the TVET colleges, even withstanding the financial problems that we have. And part of the reason that we've been able to do this is that the funding that we put into it, in partnership with donors and so on, has been levered. So it's far more than just the funding that the department puts into it. But it also is one of the risks, because although we are looking at this issue of funding, as the donors, if the donors pull out, that will be a difficulty. And I know the global funding from the global donors is about to come to an end at the end of 2016. So we're going to need to get further funding at that point. But at the moment, it has been rolled out to all the TVET colleges as well as all the universities. And we are working in partnership with the Department of Social Development as well as the Department of Health in order to do this. And there are a number of different programs that are linked to it, which are really looking at the wider social issues as well and behaviors. So we really do believe this is an important program to continue to support. But we thought it might be, I think it might be helpful for the Portfolio Committee if you invited the HAIDS program to come and present to you so they can actually show you what work has been done and where we are in relation to rolling out this program across the system. One of the statistics I think is quite interesting is this year, in the first half of the year, we met the milestone of 100,000 new students being tested for HIV within 6 months, which is much better than previously achieved, and that we do put down to the education program that's out there, because these students come forward voluntarily to be tested in relation to the program. Thank you.
Thank you for all the responses. I will now ask if honourable members have got follow-up questions, but also to caution that due to time constraints, I will not give you another round. I'm just allowing you follow-up questions, and then we move on to the next presentation. How is this? All right. Honourable Member Mbata, question?
Just a short follow-up, Chair. One of the suggestions I made, which maybe it might mean nothing to the privacy on the other side, is the relationship and the collaborated efforts with the provinces and to a greater extent sometimes with the municipalities in facilitating the building of closer health facilities. I know most of our FETs are in communities, but to make sure that there is a coordinated effort between the primary health facility and the education inside the TVETs. Looks like you get confused sometimes. You are not even interested in this.
No, true, you just know we've picked that up.
Oh.
We've really noted it.
Okay. Well, this is very interesting because these TVETs mean a lot to communities at the end of the day.
I take it that we are now done. Chairperson, just because we have the DG here, and you know we have seen and we understand the circumstances under which the report was compiled, etc. Just as far as Forest Program 2 is concerned, there are very important policy matters which finally will find its way into legislation. Is everything on track so far?
We're on track. We're on track in respect to those issues.
Okay. Well, we've come to the end of the engagement on the first briefing by the DG and his team. General observations are that the committee is not happy with your performance in this first quarter. There's displeasure.
Well, I know that we are expected to understand, particularly on the migration challenges. But truth be told, when the president pronounced the separation of the department from your basic education department, at that time he also pronounced on the migration of the TVET colleges and your AET colleges. I think preparation for this should have started then. All right? It has not happened. But now we're sitting with serious challenges that, from where I'm sitting, are going to impact on the implementation of your national development plan. I want to take it from there, because it is this national development plan that puts emphasis on increased access to education. It also puts emphasis on bridging the inequality gap, and also put emphasis on quality education. And we have the white paper, and presently it is at its implementation stage. And this one is within that. So there's no way in which we can look at this migration outside the implementation of the white paper. Above all, your NDP pillar is innovation. So I hear you wanting us to understand that you do not get this and that, you know, but I think innovation, we are going to depend on your innovation here to make sure that we don't fail the people of the Republic of South Africa, particularly at that level. I know we're still going to get a presentation, but already we have had some information at the community college and training level. It will not be good enough, and it is not in the best interest of this country. Just at that level, because that's where we say we're picking up those who have not been to school so that they can be educated and then be able to be exposed to skills development, and then make a contribution on the inclusive economic growth. All right. Well, the committee takes note of the new reporting guidelines by the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, and further notes that the information reported is preliminary. I still don't understand why it's preliminary, but it's okay, we're learning every day. Must remember, the quarter starts from April to June. So why end of July, beginning of August, we still have got preliminary information, which means there was late submission of the first quarter report. Yes? Yes. Because if you tell us about July information, now you're encroaching to the second quarter, because it's July, August, September. September, we will be looking at that information. So I don't understand why preliminary. But let's not get used to the habit of postponing. Procrastination is a thing of time. Let's do our work and learn to submit on the given time. Let's be exemplary, especially at this level. Let's submit at the correct submission date. Information must be timeless. That's not what I'm saying, the constitution. And the information must be accurate. That's not what I'm saying, it's the constitution. So all of us have got to adhere to that. So the preliminary, next time, let's not hear preliminary, because it does provide you with some, it's like it gives you an opportunity to hide behind something. No, we want information, no preliminary, just, you know, full account for a quarter. Then you bring it to us. We can't postpone. Because if we encroach into July, then we're pushing the work of this quarter to another quarter again. So we can't afford to do that. Remember, your plans are time-bound and they've got a budget attached. That budget must be used accordingly. All right. There is consensus among members that the department should come back to the committee to present a comprehensive report on the function sheet
a progress report. But also it will be equally important that the department comes back also and presents to this committee a progress report on the implementation of your the skills development strategy. Come again? Sita landscape. But is that not flowing from the skills development strategy? Yes, should come from there. It cannot come from anywhere else. A new one? A landscape. Okay. Oh, the new one. All right. No. Okay, fine. I'm still in there. All right. No, that's fine. Yeah. Let's have that to present it to us as well. Because we want to see... busy talking. Can I allow them to finish? Okay. We do want an impact on skills development, but I'm honest. We have a full program, ne? 21 years down the line, there's still skills shortage. Doesn't make sense, and there's budget. So we do want an impact in this area, so that when we talk about economic growth, at least we should be able to make quality input to that through skills development. Baba, I can't understand. You have a full program, you've got features. We do want an impact. So if we can then have this report, and then from there an implementation plan, that we will then be able to monitor on a quarterly basis as well. And where you have agreed on targets, we're saying this again, we're repeating ourselves. Can we please achieve those targets? Because we take it that you have agreed on those targets after carefully applying your minds and also put linking a budget to it. So can we please achieve all those targets? If we can just, if we can just make sure that we focus on achievement of all those targets. For now, doesn't look good. The committee registered, what is this? All right, the committee registered concerns on the non-achievement of targets within time, the given time frame. We're dealing with leadership, top leadership here, not dealing with junior management, top management. So, can you please assist us and lead by example? Talking top management and highly qualified people. So, can we benefit them from you by making sure that you achieve all your targets? The inadequate funding of the department by the National Treasury is taken seriously, and the committee will further recommend for additional funding. Actually, I know we've been doing that, and we've tried to also influence this other committee on appropriation. What is this committee? The standing, SCOA. Yes. We've tried to influence them as well. We're trying everything in our power to influence decision making in this area. But also, if you understand, that will defeat even the purpose of trying to motivate. Understanding, we all know it's not, it's an offense. Now, the treasury norm at the end of the first quarter is 25%. I see your expenditure, Mr. Trudeau, somewhere it's 20%, 19%, and some it's 80%. Hey, no, doesn't look good. You see, we don't want to give you excuses. All what we're saying is that let's comply. Whether transfers or what, there's a compliance issue here. It's not what we're saying. At least let's try and comply with treasury prescripts. So, otherwise, we will then be waiting for the presentation on that progress report. And then, yes, on the HAIDS program again. I think
these ones are the reports that we've been expecting from you in the near future. So otherwise, I must say that we have come to an end, and I can see honourable members are satisfied with your responses, but there must be, on top of these responses, there must be commitment. Mr. Patel, do you still want to say something?
Please, Chair, I hope you'll allow me the point of exigency. Can we, through the liaison officer and DPME, issue, look at the schedule in regards to how we must report, in regards to preliminary, etc., and the timing of the report?
Okay.
Because of that change, particular processes. So that the scheduling of it can happen in the portfolio committee once the processes in government are complete, or at whatever stage. But I mean, we were just caught here in the middle of the change. So if you can liaise with your office, and then we will look at that.
But what we are seeing from you is close monitoring will help you as well. The more time we give you, the more you also relax. And I'm told that people perform better when they work under pressure. So we're trying to push you. And judging us by our good intention, we want delivery, service delivery, in all areas of your work. Ms. Killian?
Listen, I was just thinking perhaps the problem is a system problem, that the information is preliminary until all verification has taken place, and therefore it must be called preliminary figures until proper verification has taken place. So I thought that was probably part of the process, and that's also why they must report to the Department of Provincial and Monitoring, what performance monitoring, DPE, based on original preliminary figures, and then after 90 days later on the confirmed verified figures. So that's just how I understood it. So if I'm incorrect, please just correct that.
Okay, yeah, let's discuss the DG's office. Okay, and then yeah, okay, fine. We'll meet you halfway, as long as we also meet us halfway. Yeah. All right, and assist Mr. Trudeau there. You know, he's a perfectionist, so, but in the manner in which you are implementing your programs, you are really disrupting his work. Yes, disrupting his work. There's somewhere where there's an over expenditure of 120%. And somewhere 13%, when the treasury norm is at 25%. I'm sure you also don't like this one. 39, the overall expenditure, which is far above 25%. Guys, then we're in trouble. All right, but thank you very much. I think we have spoken to the issue of underfunding, and we are all, I'm sure we will also be able to make a recommendation. Because whether we want or not, if education is not well funded, this, you know, transformation from where people come from poor backgrounds, not being able to access education, that one we will not be able to achieve. We have started, but we must achieve it fully. So we will not be able to achieve if we don't have money. So, but also, where there's money, let that money be spent correctly, and let's achieve. I like the idea that you put up of having to do more with less for now, until such time that there's money, and reprioritization. I like that idea. And this is standard for this man. But that's fine. Thank you, Ben. Shall we then move on to the next presentation briefing?
Yeah, thank you very much, Chair. Really, as you are emphasizing, that on DP is our guiding document, our guiding plan. But perhaps we should also take into account that it's not fully funded as a plan. but was weaned much that we can in order to ensure that we close come to what it is prescribing. And secondly, I understand the portfolio committee is setting its target to be ensuring that we get fully funded as a department, and we appreciate that chair. The target we will closely monitor. Yeah.
Which committee meeting will be that one? We will come to account to you. I was on a lighter note. Okay, you may proceed.
Yeah. So I'll ask Mr. Patel to take us through the presentation in this area. But I think the committee has also requested us to present a full narrative of the report. And we are committing ourselves into providing that in due course. These are mainly highlights of what has happened thus far.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the context of this presentation was in regards to the salary and remuneration issues, and I think the full report will cover all other aspects. Also, we've got a standing rule now in the department that there is no more the FET Act, but the CET Act, Continuing Education and Training Act. And also the standing rule is we must begin to get used to saying community education and training colleges, and not AET is but one, will become one component. Chairperson, the presentation is going to look at the overview of the transferred posts, the status of the posts, the status of appointments into the department, the claims that we received and paid, progress on queries is at the 31st of July, and interventions by ourselves to resolve the challenges, and future plans to improve challenges on salaries. Chairperson and members, the status of transfer to AF posts, the next slide, is that the total number of posts that were transferred were 18,938 that were the staff working at the erstwhile AF centres. The total AF post transferred from the provincial education departments, 352 posts. And total AF post transferred effective 1st April was 19,290. Now, in the next slide, Chairperson, the status of appointments into the department. In the Eastern Cape, the number of staff affected were 3,979 that were in Program 5 and Program 6, full-time on personnel. Now, the Eastern Cape did not comply with the directive from the National Treasury and in terms of advice that we had given them, because the payroll system is that you, when you do transfers, you transfer one at a time. However, National Treasury has the key to the system that will allow the gates to open, where you can push all those records in batch and in bulk, and at the same time we open our gate and we bring them in. Otherwise, it's one by one. It so happened that, and that's why the under expenditure is reflected, is because the Eastern Cape didn't do that programmatically, there was nothing under the sun that we could do, because it's the employer that must activate that particular area. So the Eastern Cape were then paying the salaries in April and May because the systems were running, and that's why the under expenditure. But National Treasury had to intervene because they indicated you can't open the gates often because you're going to get a lot of the system will be destabilized. So it was only because of that they intervened, and then we got them on the 1st of June. So if you look at it, April and May, they were paid by the Provincial Education Department, who claimed from
who claim from us, and we'll offset it against any claims that we have against them. In Free State, 50 full-time on personnel. Again, the province did not push them to our side, and these we had to do individually because that's what they said, we can't open the gate again. So we had to do them individually. In Gauteng, zero. They all came over smoothly. In KwaZulu-Natal, plus minus 6,500 monthly claims. Now, KwaZulu-Natal is at the 31st of March in a backlog in terms of the payment of the adult education, and I call it adult education trainers, of 6,500. Some of them, most of them, was an 8-month backlog. Now the question is, how do they afford it? The problem is with KZN, they did not implement a very early decision in the early 2000s that said that in regards to adult education, we should employ unemployed educators. Because if you remember, we had the rationalization, we had those excesses, and we had unemployed educators because the colleges were still churning them out and the system was rationalizing. But what KZN did is that all those 6,500 are actually, most of them are currently full-time educators. Right? So if you say they didn't get paid for 8 months, it was additional particular salary. And that's why perhaps it did not come up into the system because it was extra. Some people may say it. And the employer is entitled to allow staff to do other remunerative work if it is in the interest of the state and it doesn't affect their current work. So, for example, we utilize teachers and lecturers to mark exam papers. That is a second appointment. Now, I will tell you how we dealt with this issue. So it means they were 8 months delayed. The files were there. We cannot process anybody on the employer system because they can't come over programmatically. And the other reason is why they could not come over programmatically is that the payroll system doesn't allow two employers to have the same person on the payroll. So because these were exceptional appointments, the one employer can have the one person having two posts and being paid, but it doesn't allow, and it's a safeguard of the system. So we have to do that all manually. Secondly, these are not appointments, they are claims. So people claim hourly for the work that they do. Those have to be verified by the principal, the district official, finally by head office, and then finance would authorize the payment. In Limpopo, 2,077 part-time appointments. Now, the issue was, Chairperson, and I must say that if we were a business and we were accountable to our shareholders, we would have gone to court, taking our creditors to court. Now, the issue here is that they unilaterally, and I would say in violation of the Intergovernmental Relations Act and the protocol signed between our Director General and their accounting officer and our minister and the MEC, increased the salaries of those people on the 1st of March 2015. Now, in all issues, it will be criminal of us to honor that because we have no authority and no permission from Parliament in terms of the budget to have an over expenditure of 66 million. So, yes, we're going to have problems, we're going to have unions, etc. But we will have to bear the storm out. And the next slide. Is that the next slide? Yeah. In the Mpumalanga, I'm going to go quickly through this. You can see the challenges experienced. 50 part-time on personnel, so we had to do that manually. Northwest, 1,500. And again, here in the Northwest, similar problem like KwaZulu-Natal. These people hold double posts, and so they could not come over programmatically. The Northern Cape, 250, also could not be done programmatically because they had two jobs. know, we discovered very late, and we discovered somewhere in February, that we couldn't find any legislation under which the Western Cape were funding the AA centers. And clearly part of our problem is we cannot perpetuate the flaunting of a law. So, well, you know, there may be some basis in which the Western Cape had done it, or the Eastern Cape, or KZN would have done it, but that's caused the differences. Now, when I said there was no law in which money could be transferred to an adult education and training center, there was no law for that. Yes, we can transfer to TVET colleges, we can transfer to universities. And the center management were employing people. And state money had to be utilized for the appointment of people in post, in terms of the AA sector. So we had a problem there. Now what we indicated, it was a state's intention that all adult educators are employed by the state. So we then had to appoint them. Now remember, we don't have the files, we don't know who they are, we don't have them on the payroll system, so we had to work with our officials in our regional office in Western Cape to get the information, their full particulars, their bios, the qualifications, and then to appoint them. So they were lucky that they had the employment elsewhere, and at least they came into the state system. Next one. Now, let's look at the status. In April 2015, we had a problem in KZN, right? Claims received. We received nothing from the Eastern Cape, because they were paying for April and May. For the Free State, automatically, the bulk of them came in over automatically to Bursal. There were one or two, 50 or so. Gauteng, all of them came through. KwaZulu-Natal is a problem area. 6,500 claims and 5,000. Now, we paid the April, 10% the April, the May, and the June claims. We paid them by end of April and May, by end of July. We had taken 2 months, noting that we got the files late, that we had to process all that. We paid 5,796, and in May we paid 5,609, and we paid this end of July and 3rd of August. So a lot of the noise that came out of that, that was it. They haven't been paid for June because those claims are still being verified. Now, we want to move away from the claim system because really it takes a long time. And if we're going to have them as the only employment, then people must get paid on time. Limpopo, the issue happened programmatically, so there's not a problem. The only problem in Limpopo was that they had upped the unilaterally and without a mandate. If we get the money, 66 million, yes, we can take them back to the to that, but we're paying them what they were paying, were getting paid prior to the decision by Limpopo. Mpumalanga came over automatically. The Northern Cape, we had the problem in April, we fixed it up in April, and so they are back to normal. So where A1 is A1. And Northwest, we've also dealt with the issue. I just identified it as an issue. And then the Western Cape. So if you look at what is outstanding, we need to get those KwaZulu-Natal educators paid for June. And in the Western Cape, we've got 30 cases that we have to deal with in regards to claims. Next slide. So, Chairperson, this is a tally, and thank you so much for this committee. We have set up the rapid response task team. We've got every query documented. And in every case, we will always ask whether that matter has been reported to us. Because it's difficult to work on generalizations. Every problem related to salary is very, very big for that family and that person concerned. But in terms of our system, it could be one which, if we get the full information, we could deal with immediately and urgently. So the number of queries we received as of 31st July is 269. 216 were salary related. 269 was HR related, 139 was salary related. We have resolved 124. 15 of those are in progress. We've dealt with 89% of salary queries. Of the total number of personnel, the salary queries, it was 0.7%. And the percentage of claims, this is where the problem is. The claim system in which adult educators worked vis-a-vis, and I remember being in the old DOE, that almost 10 years ago a decision was taken to get rid of the claim system and to make them part-time appointments. But 35% of our system is claims-based, and we will have to move towards appointment-based. Next slide. That's just a summary. I'm not going to go through the 216, the number of cases, 8 labor relations, and 9 around performance monitoring and evaluation. Next one. That's a graphical depiction of the figures. Next one. I'll just go back one. You can see the blue, the big blue circle back. Right, big blue circle is the issue of HR queries, over 80%. Next one. Those are the detailed types of, medical aid or subsidies or tariffs, etc. Appointments. So you can see it's a range of the biggest one is on appointment. Next one. This is graphical depiction. Next. Short-term versus long-term. Sometimes the query is about conditions of service that we still have to deal with, concluding those, and so they cannot be resolved because it's something that we will resolve through collective bargaining and consultation. Next one. Overview of salary-related queries by province. I don't think this is the updated one. Let me just see. The numbers would not have matched. We just picked it up this morning. So for all this noting, is this? Yeah, okay. Now it's that's Western Cape is there. So 89 for KwaZulu-Natal, and we can see why, because of the 6,500 Limpopo, because they did not get the tariffs that were promised to them. Northwest, again, because of that abnormal query. Free State, Western Cape, and Mpumalanga, 7, 6, and 5. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 provinces. The other three, we had no queries. Next please. Now, in KwaZulu-Natal, Chairperson, I don't know if I'm going to detail, but I've indicated what was the cause of the delays in the salary, what was the effect on staff, and what were the interventions that we put in place. We had to go back to the staff and ask them to complete new bio forms so that we could load them on rather than waiting for another 8 months for KwaZulu-Natal. Chairperson, and I must say, is people often lament about the public service, but the officials in the department, and DG, even for you, we took away the long weekends. It was Easter time. We asked them to be on 24-hour standby. We said that if there is any salary issues, we have to deal with it immediately. So it was only out of that blood, sweat, and tears of our finance and HR people, particularly in regards to getting this done. And so we were able to at least pay end of July and August for, in KZN. But incomplete documentation, etc. And then in the next slide, we also use overtime. The salary challenges in Limpopo, I spoke about this. Really, this is a risk, but we will have to, we will have to weather the storm. We can't allow an illegal, unfunded declaration by a province on the 1st of March to be able to put an unfunded mandate on us. So, yes, staff were told you're going to get the 8 hours, etc. But we couldn't. So we are managing the situation. We're explaining to the unions and to the particular leadership. And then there was some incorrect capturing by Limpopo in regards to the 37 benefit. You see, what happens is if on the system you are not permanent, and you don't get your pension, your medical aid, we give it to you in cash, 37%. So you can't lose out if you don't have a house or medical aid. But for permanent staff, you have to make use of the benefits. These were temporary staff, they were getting their normal salary plus the 37%. Limpopo pushed them on as permanent people. When you push them on as permanent people, the permanent system doesn't allow you to pay people cash for benefits. They have to use the extra benefits, so we have to fix that up. And there's a little box at the bottom about unilateral declarations and changing of conditions of service. Next slide. Three educators have been paid more. Part-time educators, 77 paid more. Per annum. Can we go to the next slide? This is one. If you look at the 2,077 educators in Limpopo, in terms of the unilateral decision to pay them the 8 hours instead of the 6 hours, will come to a cost of 66 million rand for that one problem. And so that's why I'm saying that there were expectation raised, but the reality is people never had that in their pockets to be able to lose it. Next one. All right. So, other issues. We got appointment letters, we get contracts of employment, no salary written on there. And so it's quite difficult to be able to say, we can't guess what is the salary. The differentiated salary scale, the change of payment method by the PAG. You know, Limpopo was paying via the claim method, and suddenly they appointed all of these people onto Percel again without notifying us at the time when they had that issue. Next one. And then the Eastern Cape, again, the supply chain, they did not push them programmatically, and I indicated we've got National Treasury. There was an intervention, and that has been sorted out. Next one. Western Cape, I indicated the lecturers were not appointed on Percel, but were appointed by the AN Center. And we couldn't take it over as it is because we did not have any law that allowed us to transfer state money to an entity that doesn't have the power to manage it. In terms of whether the PFMA Section 36 at 381J or even... So the issue is that there may have been other rules that and laws that the Western Cape used, but not the repertoire that was available to us. So we had to appoint those as public servants. Then also they had a few claim systems that I indicated. Now, the issue is that we've had cases where, because they were in private employ of the college, they could be appointed, but if they were either, not only in the Western Cape, but particularly in the Western Cape, if they were rationalized out of, retrenched out of the system, they had a block on the state payroll system because they undertook not to be employed by the state. In other provinces, there's also cases where people were dismissed, but because they were appointed by the councils of TVET colleges, personal system blocks them. We have to investigate what was the reason that they were blocked. I must say that we're not too hard and fast, and the DBSAS said, look, those people that took the early retirements, etc., you know, let it be gone. If we really require people, they can be re-employed. There was no harm to the system. But in cases of theft and fraud, etc., we had no control of them, but they were banned from being employed in the public service. So there are some of those that we're dealing with. And if those educators are required, we will ask National, DBSA and National Treasury to lift the block. Next one. Free State, small issues. And in the Free State, we had a supplementary run and we paid those people. Next one. Northwest, I spoke about. Again, they were not appointed on Percel. They were claim system. Next one. interventions we undertook is working overtime, introducing bulk payments, appointment of interns, appointment of additional staff, and introduction of a more streamlined claim procedure. Next. Future plans is decentralizing of data capturing. We've got personnel loaded in a lot of our TVET colleges, but also at our regional offices. We have to fast-track the filling of posts, review the claim system, investigating issues around the Limpopo issue and how we're going to deal with it, and harmonizing conditions of service. That has cost implications, and I answered that question earlier. Next. Should we thank you? Ah, thank you.
So, that's the situation, Chair. This is not the total picture of what is obtaining in this particular area. You would think at times that the spaza shops are not things to look forward to in terms of management and basic administration, but I must say, through this process, I've learned that, in actual fact, our spaza shops are managed far better than some of the experiences that we are going through. Some other things, you can't even explain how it actually happened in the course of us doing government work, but that is the experience. I'm not going to point any area, but this presentation is actually showing what are we going through. This is ad hoc work. None of what we are dealing with here is in any of the targets we spoke about. But it's taking a lot of our work. I think from Limpopo, some people tried to stage a sit-in in the department. But when a member of the public or a member of the portfolio committee passes by there, wouldn't understand as to what is the kind of the problem and the damage that is therein. So we would be more inclined to sympathize with this person who's standing outside the offices of the Department of Higher Education and Training, not really having been exposed to what is happening in the system, especially where they are coming from. But we are attending to all those issues. It's not easy work, but we are doing it, and we are determined that we are going to succeed. We'll get it right. Thank you very much, Chair, and the members of the committee.
Have been listening to a presentation. We actually asked for this presentation when all our offices were inundated by people phoning us to say we did not get our salaries. We thought, let's get a true picture of what is happening so that we can then engage and make recommendations where we think, you know, those recommendations will help. Over to you, honorable members, Professor Pozoli, Ms. Killian, Ms. Nkunu, Ms. Mbata, in that order. The last one will be Mr. Kekan.
Chair, thank you. Thank you very much for your presentation, which is very depressing in a way to hear the challenges you've had to cope with, and impressive the way in which you've risen to the challenge. You know, I just want to make a comment on the department as a whole. Higher education used to be in basic education, but the higher education section was actually mainly universities. We're now sitting in quarterly reports of the department where hardly a word is said about universities. In other words, one begins to wonder whether they aren't being sidelined. by the massive problems that have been imposed on this department through this function shift. TVET, one problem. AET now, equally, in fact, worse problem. You say they are worse managed than spaza shops. So what I'd like to ask is, at some point, whether the department could reassure us that universities remain a key priority of the department, and that at some stage the problems around this function shift are going to decline. And I hope we'll get that reassurance when we get the overview of the whole function shift, sort of 6 months after the event or something. because it is a huge concern to me personally that universities hardly appear on the radar anymore. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Bozoli, Honorable Killian.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I equally want to say to the department, I think they have managed this process again remarkably well. I think we don't quite understand the challenges that they have been faced with. Just three issues that I wanted to raise. The one is, I can again see that the harmonizing of the conditions of service will be a massive challenge. And that clearly, if we can just have a better understanding, how does this sector function? What are the qualifications required? And that brings me to the second element, and that is, have you done any verification of qualifications? Because from what we have heard, it appears certainly that it was in fact managed like a spaza shop. And don't we have people in the system that are not adequately qualified? So when and how is that to be done? Because I can understand that the first issue was just to move the people over, but clearly we must improve the system. So what is and how would you approach that process? And then lastly, Chairperson, I feel it is crucial if we just look at the challenge, the lack of cooperation of the department, provincial department, and the NEC. We cannot let them off the hook, Chairperson. I mean, it is really not acceptable. The whole basis of the Constitution is cooperation to make sure that we all deliver jointly on time. Now, if this function shift has been coming so over such a long period, why did the provincial department not prepare for the final move, the shift?
What's your recommendation?
So, I want to come then just to the element of the officials in specific provinces who moved quick increases. I think some of them must be reported to the Public Service Commission for investigation. And I would really like to say, if the department is aware of any undue processes that were followed, you are duty bound, Chairman, to report such to the Public Service Commission for investigation. We must stop the fraud and corruption that in some departments has become endemic. We don't have a lot of money. We must turn the corner and we must spend the money so carefully that we cannot afford this, because in the end this is going to catch up with us. So clearly I want to, we can't. It's water under the bridge. Whatever the lack of cooperation was from the MECs, etc., be that as it may. But those officials who were part and parcel of this process and who have effectively defrauded the nation, they must be exposed. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member Kilian. Over to you, Honourable Member Mkunu.
It's me, Chair.
No, you're coming after Honourable Member Mkunu. I have a list. Discarding. Honourable Member Mkunu and then come back.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. I think we are getting a clear picture of what a difficult task you had with regards to the migration process. But I think we all expected it. It was not really going to be plain sailing. It was a very huge task, and challenges were bound to happen. My question is with the non-payment of salaries. I would like to know how many educators have resigned from the employ of the department due to non-payment of salaries, and what is the effect of the resignations to teaching and learning. Lastly, what plans are in place to fill their positions? And I would like to agree lastly with the Honorable Killian that the issue of harmonization of conditions of services is crucial. Yeah. No, just to emphasize on the importance of the harmonizations of conditions of service.
Okay, thank you. And then Honorable Member Mbata, Honorable Member Mbata to the Honorable Member.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. I wonder what is your interest, Honorable Chile. You seem to be losing grip even in court. Thank you very much, Chair. Chair, I must be one of those who joined the chorus. I think this is a very well-delivered project. I'm very impressed. I agree with Honorable Killian. I think the provincial authorities, whether with the knowledge of MECs or the head of departments, who increase salaries 6 months or a year before the finalization of the process, must be attended to. I have an experience of a measure that happened here in Cape Town where one technicon was merged with another before the colleges, and the other technicon, 6 months to a year, the council, through the recommendation from management, shot up the salaries of executive and right up until level four, extremely high, only to discover that 2 years to the merger, the very same technicon was actually broke. Now, the people that actually do those things do not know the after effects of those activities. In fact, you might find that they drag you into even to the bargaining council, should the system provide a bargaining council, where you will be asked to explain those things on your own when you were not even part of it, because they might have caused horrible discrepancies in the salary scales of the system, but also, since they were illegally done, they have to be attended to. Now, I am concerned that the system has taken so much time to come to this. I just want to recommend that the completion of the migration now must move to other service level issues. For instance, the extent to which the student benefits value-wise in the delivery. I think the department must find a way in which we standardize. I know with the upset on the facilities and the differentiation on the offerings on the facilities and the resourcing of the system. But we must reach an agreement at some point of what has to be expected by a student who walks into a door of a TVET college. And two, money-wise, what is the average price check per subject, the cost, a certificate? You need to arrest those factors now, because if you don't arrest them now, you will tend to find out that there are councils
who will venture into what I would call opportunistic angles because of better facilities in some of these children. Some of them are new, some of them are old. Even though some of them were closed at the same time, but the facilities reflect a different era from one to the other. And people might do what the universities have done, try and apportion money to those facilities without the authorization of the department. They will portion that through subjects, they will portion that through accommodation, and they will do a range of things to complicate the system because they think the system is self-funded. So those things have to be arrested so that even though you are a government that doesn't support free education, but you should know how to arrest what I would call exploitation of your own citizens by extraordinary scrupulous people that you find yourself having hired within your own system. Thank you. Oh, Chair, I must thank the DA for assisting me with some of the wedding. I think we are moving forward quickly.
We're all members of the Portfolio Committee.
Do you want more time, Mr. Mbatha? All right, thank you. We will now call upon Honourable Member Ketana.
What I want to check with the department, because this migration thing is very important, that when in our system we want to change for a better way of operations, I mean, the architect, I'm sure, for our constitution has anticipated this, because when they said we are a central government and not a federal, when that debate of federal and unitary state was there, they persisted. South Africa is so divided ethnically, racially, to an extent that the unitary state will serve us better if the central control of things. How do we use that central control to move things for the better? Because we can't have provinces doing as they wish, dragging their feet, while we need to change systems for the better cause of performance in South Africa. So is there, the question I'm asking, is there some kind of recourse, some measure that we can take to make sure that we get things move expedient? Otherwise, I suspect the migration process will always have a hiccup, something cropping up, because human beings are human beings. If there's an opportunity to exploit the situation, they'll always do so. But I think we just need to take measures that are available to us and make sure that everybody is aware that we are moving, and anybody doesn't want to move, there'll be recourse.
Thank you, Honorable Ketana, Honorable Members, for all your comments and the questions. We'll now hand over to the DG to respond.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think perhaps what we need to outline in respect to some of the overarching questions that the members are asking, in respect adult education and training as well as TVET colleges, we are addressing transitional matters, challenges, together with performance-related matters, with all that goes with it. Now, in respect to universities, we are dealing purely with performance-related matters. the arranged aspects of transition. Now, what then got elevated in the process because of its very nature and agency? It's mainly these transitional matters. That's why adult education and training TVET colleges would receive that much attention and pronouncement in the work that we're doing. But we have to bear in mind that the biggest portion of our budget goes to universities, 57%. So we're talking in money terms about 32.8 billion is to the university, and there is focused attention in respect to the question of performance. There are few universities that we have actually put in terms in respect to their performance in every respect, quite closely. Also, one of the reasons to come late, it was more university-related matters this morning. So they received our full attention. The members must be assured that it's a system that we cannot afford to neglect or to sideline. Yeah. So, Mr. Patel.
DJ, thank you very much. Honorable Chair and honorable members, I think this in this exercise, the fundamental question to be answered is, was it good that a decision taken, was it good that we took the decision now? Was it good, is it better to weather the storm now or not to have sailed at all? Linked in with the question of a federal versus a unitary particular system. Look, I mean, ours was a project, I mean, an experiment from 1994. And I think everybody realizes that higher education and skills is something that was just not within the capability of many of the provinces to manage. And I think the answer is also, one day, delaying it one day longer would have continued perpetuating it. Now, part of the whole issue was the legal process took some time, but when we dealt with the legislation, it already began to give signals. But, Chairperson, what I want to say is that even if the migration did not happen, this portfolio company would have still been responsible for FET colleges and AX, and we would have to have worked with provinces, etc. So it would have been a strange particular mission, because it is still a provincial competence. Now, Member Kilian, the issue is that you raise the question, but that's our next phase. Our number one issue is to ensure that people who get paid in terms of their terms and conditions, even if the terms are incorrect, we have to just maintain that. Now, once we've got it, we've got the file, we have to start the operation of looking at what the minimum requirements are to be able to be an adult educator. It could be, and I suspect that by and large, people who just appointed, not necessarily taking some of the minimum requirements into account. So we will have to undertake a process that we had in 1995, with under and unqualified educators in schools. And we may want to, and we'll have to put a process in place where if they've been teaching for 10 or 15 or 20 years, you know, and the system allowed them to do that, we can't just discard them. So we'll have to probably put a plan. But yes, where it has been illegal and today or yesterday that happened, we seriously have to block it. So we will have to manage it. So that will be part of the harmonization issue. The DG will respond to the issue of both Member Mbata and Member
is particularly happening. Member Nkunu, the resignations out of those 18,150 since the 1st of April. Unfortunately, we don't know what the reasons were, whether it was personal, whether it was promotion, but it's a very, very small percentage of the 18,000 people. Six retired, five passed on, and 53 were terminated because of end of contract, contract ended, etc. Member Bartha, I think I spoke over the issue of the fundamental question was whether it was good to have done it and whether it's time. And I think the issue is yes, as we move, we've got a solid foundation because we now control both the funding and the policy and the legislation to be able to get the system to harmonize and to move. It's a big system, and so you're absolutely correct that issues are going to be about quality. If I'm not mistaken, you suggested a charter of student rights. I mean, you didn't say charter, but I mean the issue is student, when you come here, what do you expect, etc. And if we can't deliver it, at least we know we can't deliver it, but know that we can't. And then in terms of the cost per student also, I think that's very good advice. Jefferson, thanks.
Thank you, Jesse. There was a question on the ceiling of the post in cases where, you know, there are people that are leaving the system. Our regional offices, immediately upon resignation, they appoint, they submit documentation to the department, and we appoint on the system because we don't want to allow any class to be without a teacher. So we don't waste any time in that regard.
Yeah, on the matters where they are really disturbing the activities that have actually taken place, we are discussing those matters with the executive in order to determine as to what course of action could actually be taken. But those that are administrative, we've already dealt with them and we continue to pursue. Now, as we are doing this work, there are a lot of things that we unravel. And we expect in that process we'll bump into disclaimer after disclaimer. You can't predict because the appetite to cover is too huge. We learn by accident. It's in the nature of what we are doing at the present moment. We are not told how the situation, and it's not in any book. It's when we are doing the actual work and gosh, is it what is happening? But the big question, how people could get away with such things within the operation of the state. It's happening. I don't have an answer to that. We only do the best that we can as the Department of Higher Education and Training. And I think perhaps it's a bit of an experience because in the measures of universities, one aspect that Honorable Mbata is talking about, it was experienced during that process. And some of the problems that Walter Sisulu University in actual fact is still engulfed with are related to this question of pushing up the salary bill on the eve of finalization of the processes. And they hit you quite very, very hard. To the tune of billions of rands that are not there, that were never budgeted at any given point in time. So that's the situation that we are dealing with in the main. Well, thanks.
Chair, can I just follow up on something?
Yes, yeah, sure.
Honorable Tekana, sorry about that.
Yeah.
Let's put the other issues that are specific to your presentation aside. I have an outstanding issue. The Montreal Tibet College Deputy Director of Finance, the issue where you took over the disciplinary processes, make that example a practical example to us. But let's go back to what I will assume is going to be the framework of the speed of the disease. How are you going to approach your disease? Because you need to act and act fast. Because some of the things that the DG you are referring to, they are so horrific that they will become part of what I will call the student demands. They're just going to graduate into the portfolio of problems if you don't act and act fast.
No. Granted, Honorable Member, we can't even argue on that one. So on those, there are two cases in actual fact that we are working on the Office of Deputy Principal. And the process is unfolding at the present moment. But I suppose by the very nature of a disciplinary inquiry, the detailed aspects are subject to care. But quite advanced now in terms of the processes by the department. Thank you.
We're now going to close because I think there has been some thorough discussion and we still have to adopt minutes and have a break before dinner. So with your permission, can we then thank the department for the presentation and wish them good luck in the hard work that lies before all of us. Can I then allow the department to be released so that we continue with the last item on our agenda, which is the adoption of minutes. Mm-hmm. And the report is minutes that you must adopt and a report that you must adopt. Yeah, let's hear.
Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, DG. The minute is over. The minute that you are talking is the minute for the 21st of June. Can we start on those first page? Anything? Any correction? First page. Second page.
Some of the brief as follows. Some of the key findings of the report focus on self-experience, language, student living. I think we need to say student living conditions and government. The word conditions that makes it.
Yes, is that correct? There's an omission of the word condition. And we add that word and that's fine for pastry. Is that agreed? Okay. Fourth page?
Page four?
Yeah.
The first paragraph on top. One, two. the second sentence, third line, he acknowledged that the TOC did not have adequate capacity to execute its tasks, its work, and the department will establish a subunit that will provide secretariat support to the TOC, just TOC.
Okay. Is that accurate? TO? Two. Yeah. Then let's move to page 5. You must be happy with the spelling, the language, especially the phonetics. Page 5 is 5. Page. Oh, yes? Kine?
Yes, I'm sorry. I was not at the meeting. Now, I don't know. I can't correct it. But I was just querying the fact that there's a resolution or a recommendation that the university will look at the cost drivers. I was under the impression that that is a departmental responsibility and not a university responsibility. So I just wanted to suggest, if that was not what was decided by the committee, that we must just reconsider that, because I think that that would not be correct. So I'm just asking that question.
What are other people saying? Is it agreed that it is a departmental responsibility and not a university? Okay. We pass in page 5 to the last page.
With due respect, I think we mustn't get confused. I think we must contextualize rather than look at it from the assumptions point of view. What was the issue? Maybe Honorable Siwela and Mkhunu can remind us, because some of these responses are direct responses from the university presentation. So, what was that issue, Siwela? Because we must have contextualized it.
Yeah, the point is that if we're making correction, everybody must say exactly what the correction is.
Yes.
If you can't do so, then we're going to adopt what has been suggested, that it is a departmental rather than university. So, members of the committee must say what the correction, exactly what the correction is. The proposal that is there now is that this is a departmental responsibility. Anybody who can't tell that must tell us why it should be a university responsibility. Otherwise, we're going to adopt the change that says it should be departmental. Yeah? Including?
Thank you, Chair. Honorable Matt, I think we're all concerned about high student fees, I mean, in all universities, and then we are requesting the department to look into the matter, cost drivers and also the year. I think that one we should push, because it's also affected the NSFAS thing. Yeah.
Okay, sure. So, we're going along with the change that is the department. Last page is page 6. Anything on page 6? No, nothing. So can I get a formal proposal for adoption?
Sorry, Chair. Look, if this meeting that happened some time back, but I just want to go back, Chair, before you pass page 5. It relates to the exact same issue in the resolution around the investigation on cost drivers. If I recall, recall the discussion correctly and an input into the discussion, Chair, it wasn't limited to an investigation on the cost drivers, but also into whether or not there can be any legislative intervention. So the analysis or investigation into whether or not there is a possibility of any legislative intervention as it pertains to the increasing of fees that affect public funds, in particular NASFAS funds, raised the same issue that was raised then, to say that, and I know that I raised this issue, to say that there is NASFAS funds that are being diverted into fee increments, and therefore it's affecting public funds, particularly in institutions where close to 90% of those that are being that are enrolled are being funded through NASFAS, and therefore an investigation into legislative possible legislative interventions in order to control that, in addition to understanding the cost drivers that increase these fees, or what is actually increasing the reasons for these increments.
So you still agree with the proposal that we should change the way to department rather than university?
Although I'm increasing the scope of the investigation, because it was discussed there as well.
Okay. Can I hear the next person? Professor Pozzoli.
Chair, I think we need to have a separate discussion on this. And I'm not sure whether we're going to capture all of that complexity in the minute. Thank you.
The minutes,
Chair.
For the purposes of the minutes, I think we can leave. Yeah, Kashin wanted to say something.
Chair, I want to assist you, which is in line with the first utterances that you have already communicated. I think for the purposes of this, let's give the Secretariat the opportunity to summarize with all intentions what has been said by Honorable Kassim, together with the spirit of what was communicated at the minutes of the meeting, which means if Honorable Kassim thinks that the record as it stands has not incorporated enough that was within the thought processes of the minister, as we confirm them now, then we can still give the Secretary the opportunity to try and incorporate that. But be that as it may, once you say department, irrespective of the scope, I think we've captured the essence of the minutes. What then becomes the issue that has been raised by Prof. Pozzoli is the extent to which you complete the picture of what exactly you mean. That's a subject for another day, which is one of the reasons why I think we suggested this point. There is a lot to be done here. I think this is one of those workshop issues that the committee will have to undertake at some point, in particular with the department, to try and ascertain a way forward in the next, at least foreseeable future, of a manner in which universities will politically and economically justify their increases. Basically, for me, that will be another add-on, but the minutes as they are, I will recommend them all. I'm a mover if you want that, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mbata. There's a proposed adoption by Mbata. Any seconder? Suwela. That is the case. Thanks very much. We take consideration of all the proposals that this needs further discussion, but that's a separate thing for a proposed workshop. For now, the minutes have been adopted. The next one is the report. or of the ACDP, CETA, EDP, ETDP, CETA, and NSF, CETA. 16 pages. First page?
Okay.
Yes. Sheila?
No. Check the thing. Just look at the bottom of the north paragraph. It's just an just relax. I don't have many corrections. I just wanted to propose that we say the NSF is listed as a Schedule 3A entity instead of was listed. Thank you, Chair.
Mm-hmm. We change the tense there. Is that fine? Okay. Seventh page. Third page. I guess the presumption is that you've seen the minutes and the report and you've gone through them, and if there are changes, grammar or otherwise, you have noted that them, and if I call pages, you just say here, do this particular change. So we are on the third page. First page. Fifth page. Sixth page. Seventh page. Eighth page. Yeah, sure.
Jefferson, I'm a
big... Use your mic because you're not asking me, you're asking the house.
I just wanted to make sure that the capturing of the figures are correct, because certainly I for one have not checked them.
Here's the chat. That's the response. That was 7th page. 8th page. Are you a mamare?
Chair?
Yeah.
Yes. That's me, Chair. I just want to bring the meeting backward. On the last paragraph of page 1, I think there was a correction done there by one of the honorable members. I think the correction is actually incorrect. It must remain as is, because the scheduling was actually done with a specific date, which is the 12th of October 2012, and that remains a fact, so it cannot be changed. So I recommend that we keep that as is, because it's not about the perception, it's a fact.
Which page are you on now?
I'm on page 1.
Okay.
On the NSF was listed. It must continue as was listed. Yeah.
Okay, that's agreed. But don't text me. Flexibility with long past page 1. Let's go to page 9. Page 9. Page 10. Page 11. Page 12, 13, 14, 15, and the last page is page 15.
I didn't want to test your flexibility, so I'm going to come in. Perhaps you need to assist me here. If you look on page 14 and 15, going into page 16, there's a number of observations that we have made. I'll give an example. An observation was made in terms of it was noted that the level of student indebtedness in higher education is a serious concern which contributes to student dropout and financial exclusions, and this affects students mainly from poor families. The NSF was requested to allocate part of its surplus funds to alleviate the challenge of student indebtedness. Now, this request, then, Chair, does not translate into the recommendations on page 16 and 17 of the committee. Now, and this is not the only one. There's a number of observations here that includes things that we would want to recommend as a committee. Now, perhaps where the problem comes in is that when we do have these discussions, we don't sit, as we have discussed previously and decided to say we should sit either afterwards or before the next meeting and, discuss as a committee what are we actually recommending for the report. We don't do that. We make our observations as part of the interactions that we do with the presentations in the committee. And the chairperson then, summarizes, but we're not really sure, as a collective chairperson, what exactly are the recommendations. Now, I want to propose that if we are, at least in this report, if we are observing certain things, we should have recommendations that are attached. Otherwise, those observations become meaningless. It's just for noting purposes. We want to be making an impact in the sector, chairperson. Therefore, if we are saying in our observations, which is correctly captured, and I remember this, that we want the NSF to allocate part of its surplus funds to alleviate the challenge of student indebtedness, we should recommend that in our recommendations, including other observations that we've made. We should have recommendations that's attached, and we actually need a discussion on that. Otherwise, we're selling ourselves short in this. I mean, we can go table this report in the House, but we don't have meaningful. We haven't had a proper intellectual discussion on meaningful recommendations to respond to the observations that we've made. We didn't have the discussion then, and we didn't have the discussion now. And therefore, it's as if we're going to just have this report go through this committee and get tabled in the House, and we're not going to be making a clear share the impact that we want to make.
I hear what you say, but how best do you think, because to arrange a special time and a day is going to be another. The purpose of making minutes is that within the constraints that we have, what changes would you like to make? You want to add a few recommendations and see if that is acceptable.
Can I suggest something, Chair?
Yeah.
Maybe before Honorable Cassidy. I don't know how this will factor into the content of the report, but my understanding of the parliamentary work, in particular, as spearheaded by the portfolio committee, is that we must always, as Honorable Kasim explained, we must always guard against making weak recommendations and making strong observations. It's supposed to be the other way around. So I tend to have a feeling that sometimes when we want to mean recommendations, we may have technically referred as observations. We may not have said those things in utterances, but it is by way of how things look. So I'm not going to blame the chair here, but under normal circumstances, when reports like these are proofread by the chair should be able to go around with the secretariat and be able to say, these observations mean so much to the committee that they must be listed under recommendations. The strength is under recommendations. There is nothing wrong with that. So I would like to suggest that since the strength now looks stronger on the observations and some of the issues here than in the recommendations, I think the secretary should be able to work with us to move those things around. Because at the end of the day, the parties that we speak to, they will not listen to the observations. They will listen to the recommendations, Honorable Chair. That is my suggestion.
Okay. Fine. I mean, that's the whole purpose of bringing meetings to the committee, so that you strengthen where you think it is weak, and if you propose, I'll suggest that you give us the exact recommendation that you want to change into, comment that you want to change into recommendation. Say number 3 or number 4 should be recommendation, so that we know exactly which ones you think. Otherwise, do you mean the whole thing must be changed? Yeah, let's say it's killer.
Chairperson, I think we can actually overcome this quite easily. If I look at it and I check the observations again, and I just try to remember what we were dealing with, possibly what we could do, and I would like to make a firm recommendation, on page 14, we have the observation, and particularly bullet 2. It was noted with concern that the NSF did not provide a list of all its funded projects in the strategic plan, etc., that we turn that into a recommendation. So then we move. Is it there? But because I didn't see that. It's not really captured. So I think what we need to do is to say that the NSF should provide that.
Yeah.
So the second point is that the Honourable Customers referred to, that we skip, that we change the last sentence and we say we move that also into the recommendation. The NSF is requested to allocate part of its surplus funds to alleviate the challenge of debt indebtedness. Or the NSF is requested to report back to the committee after they have conducted, can I just see? Requested to allocate part surplus funds to investigate and report back to the committee on surplus funds which could be alleviated, referred for, utilized to alleviate the challenge of civil indebtedness. So I think we need to do something there. Then, as far as the ETDP...
You're coming fine, the way I'm following you, but that's here, that's to conclude this particular recommendation. If you say we need to do something, what do you mean? Do you mean we should... You said we should change this also as a recommendation rather than an observation.
Chairperson, my proposal is that we keep it under observation, but that we reinforce it under the recommendation. So that would be my recommendation, that we move towards bullet 2, inclusion, as well as bullet 3, the last part. And then, if you will allow me, I think there are two matters that have also been captured under observation, which probably also need to move into the recommendation part, or the... They should be kept under observation, but we should also follow it through under the recommendation. That is bullet 2, the concern that the committee raised with regards to the increase in consultancy fees and subsistence and travel expenditure. And then bullet 3 from the bottom, which refers to training and skills development and education. The ETDP CETA was advised to have a strengthened partnership with the Department of Basic Education. Now, also that is not captured under a recommendation. So I would like to recommend that we take those other two bullets, the essence of that, and we also include that under recommendation, and the essence of our concern expressed with regard to the increase in consultancy fees, and we also move a recommendation on that one, as well as on the strengthened partnership with the Department of Basic Education. I don't know if there's anything else that we have missed. Thank you.
Yes,
sir. Yes, Chair. Chair, there's quite a lot more. In fact, if I've gone through all of them, if I go through all of these, and there's about two or three of these observations that I captured in the recommendations as it currently stands. If I have to note them in particular, for example, it talks about the collaboration with other government trade and agencies in terms of the ETPB CETA, the moratorium on payment of skills levies, as well as the monitoring and evaluation capacity. Those are the ones that capture all of the other points and observations. Actually, we should have a recommendation on each of those observations going forward. And I'll give an example. Honorable Killian has mentioned some, but I'll start from point one. When we say that the NSF should have a tracking mechanism to monitor learners' progression and absorption into the labour market, we should have a recommendation to that effect.
Yeah, let's allow Suela to respond to that question.
It's not captured again. The first one talks about monitoring and evaluation to basically exercise efficient oversight to all its funded projects for 2015-16 out there, given the huge amounts of funds committed. There's a specific thing that we are asking for that I remember from the discussion. We said that there should be a proper tracking mechanism for a learner's location, because we're not sure which of the learners that are being funded. And I think, in fact, Chairperson, it was yourself that raised this point as to where are these learners ending up. It wasn't myself or anyone else, it was yourself that raised this point. And therefore, this particular issue is a recommendation we're making to the NSF, is to say this is what we want to see in order to see exactly what is society getting out of this. But look, that is the first one. The second one, Honorable Keegan touched on that. The third one, I touched on the student indebtedness one. And the last one, there's no need for recommendation because we basically tell everyone that they should have it a clean audit. But if I go to the ETDP CETA, okay?
Yes.
Let me start with the first point. We're recommending that the strategic plan be reviewed in terms of the new national skills development strategy. It's a review that we want to take place. Therefore, we must recommend that it must take place. Also, we observed that there weren't clear targets and performance indicators. I'm not sure if Honorable Keegan picked up on this one. It related to a lot of different CETAs, but we want to say to the CETA as well, your targets must and performance indicators must be clear because they were not measurable. In fact, the AG report even said that those targets are not measurable, and it was included in the audit opinion of the Auditor General. So that's another recommendation. The consultancy fees and subsistence was picked up on the Bokillian in point number two. Point number three, we are recommending, well, we urge in an observation, but if we urge in, I would suppose that we're recommending that the ETDP CETA expand its office into districts, its offices into districts. That was a recommendation that has been made. That's under point number three. Under point number four, it was a commitment, therefore there was nothing there. Point number five, okay, we speak about the ETDP CETA should have strengthened partnership with the Department of Basic Education for the training of teachers to limit that captured in the resolution. Point number six, the regional chairs should be program should be extended to historically disadvantaged institutions so that they can benefit from it. That's a recommendation. It's captured under observation, but it's something that I believe if we observe in the committee, we want this to happen. It's a recommendation that should be adopted in the House. Then in terms of the licensing and the uncertainty it creates on the future existence of the CETA and on its organizational stability, the minister should give the directive in terms of that licensing. I think if we're going to be making a recommendation as a committee, we should be saying that the minister should be giving certainty into the future sustainability. Because if I remember the discussion correctly, Chairperson, they themselves were unsure as to their future existence and organizational stability within the new CETA framework or whatever the case may be. I'm talking now from the top of my head, but there should be a recommendation to that effect. But that would cover all of the points.
Okay.
Chair, can we just suggest then, as a matter of course, that each each observation have an associated recommendation, but that they be clearer and firmer than they are now? In the case of the monitoring and evaluation one, for example, the observation was quite clear. It said, we have problems with the fact that not every project was listed. But the recommendation is you must improve your monitoring and evaluation. So that's a little bit vague, and I would say then two things. Each critical observation needs a recommendation, A, and B, that needs to be very precise and clear what that recommendation is. Then we could maybe ask the staff to redo the minutes with those guidelines and come back to us with a revised version, because I don't think we can revise it here.
Yeah, let me check if we have the time for that, if there are no deadlines for this report.
Can I quickly
come in? Yeah, I'll allow Killian, but while you're talking, I hear the deadline in next week. Next week we stay?
No, so we can rework on them and we adopt the report next week.
Okay. All right. So, Killian, do you still want
to... I want to come in. Chairperson, I just want to say, as far as the CETA landscape is concerned, we must remember that that was inherited by the department. And it is a 5-year period, and it is the departmental sort of overview of good and bad performance and to manage this out of the system. My concern is if we as a committee recommend that they must establish more offices, and there's a review of the CETA landscape and the ETDPS or whatever they are called again, ETDC, is now realigned with another one. You see, it would be irresponsible for us to in fact request them to incur expenditure unless the framework and the new landscape is firm and is in place, and we have the strategic framework for the next 5 years. So I would really caution, we could have noted that, but I would really caution and say we can't just approach this on a blanket basis. If the Honourable Kasim and Dr. Miloli could perhaps just capture what they feel should be incorporated, and we will do the same. And all of the members to just say what do we take forward in terms of recommendations. I hear what Professor Fazoli is saying about it must be clear. I absolutely agree with that. But then we must also be realistic and pragmatic about what we put in recommendations and what we simply note as a matter of concern. Thank you, Chair.
Actually, I'm just saying that the recommendation is a recommendation. It is up to the decision maker to make that final call. We can't recommend, but the decision maker will make that call. Thank you.
Yeah. No, this is very important to me because remember, though we're not part of policy making, we still have the right as people like that to influence the policy that is going to be there. So if there's a review on the CETA policy and we can influence that review, I mean, we are the guys who represent constituencies and we know what the impact of the CETAs are. If we're not happy with it, we are the ones who must not just sit back and let policy overtake events. We are the ones who must say this is how policy must shape up if it needs to change. So I think we really doing the right thing to recommend as strong as we can, so that whoever the policy makers are, they must know the feeling of the other section of parliament, which are the people who represent constituencies. So for me that is fine. We will allow officials to go back. Fortunately there's still time. and try and recapture and strengthen recommendations, change observations to recommendation, and come back for final adoption next week Wednesday. For now, this is the end. Remember, minutes have been adopted, and this is the end of our meeting. See you next week. Thanks very much for being here.
Thank you.